just a happy camper. Rocking and a rolling.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 88 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
Oh my word, I'm so happy to be back in this seat and recording, aren't you?
Well, it's not been a 3 week break, dude. You're talking as if we've been off again.
It's 2 weeks, bro.
It feels like it.
I know, and the last one was a bloody good episode. One of our most popular, I think, on social media.
It is indeed. And talking about popular, the episode from two episodes ago, the Star Wars Last Jedi episode, has now broken our all-time barrier for most popular episode. 150,000 downloads we've done for that, baby.
That's what? Not bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not bad.
It'll do.
All right. We can always do better, unlike the film.
Good point. And the reason why we're doing so well is because we've got such a great legion of listeners out there, especially on social media. If you don't follow us already, please do. On Twitter at STTE Podcast, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, and Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast. Or if you just want to get in touch and just have a word, you can email us.
Nah, that's weird.
It seems old school now, but
which people do. Modern.
Yeah, please do. podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Do you know what, guys? I'm going to stop you right there, Ben. Yeah. Do you know why? We've had a letter come through this week.
Hold on. I thought email was old school. Do you mean through the Royal Mail?
It came
mail?
By a pigeon.
They took time to do that.
Dear Skip to the End, Merry Christmas. Sorry it's late. If it's a present for us, I'm happy for it to be late.
Yeah, I'll let them off.
Yeah, and if it's Royal Mail, it's going to be late. Right then, so, Merry Christmas, sorry it's late, I've got you all some presents. So for Mark, I've got you a Baby Driver poster and some Ryan Gosling goodies. So let's have a look at this.
Ryan Gosling goodies?
Oh man, this is the actual cinema poster for Baby
That's
cool. Driver.
That's massive.
And Jesus,
it's tight jeans I am wearing. But this is the one with just the gun and not the faces, so I haven't got Kevin Spacey looking at me as I sleep. But I've
a
got
few people
this.
Have had that.
But I've got the Baby Driver poster.
Nice.
And what's this?
What have I got?
You said Ryan Gosling, but... Oh, right. It's the Blade Runner poster.
That's awesome. Ooh.
So, Ben, here's some for you. You've got, you've got Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, shit. That's the really spacey poster. Awesome. Not that kind of spacey.
Too much spacey.
The spacey cast.
Yeah, we don't want that. And you've got, oh my lord, you're going to jizz.
What?
You've got two limited edition, the orange and the white version for Blade Runner 2049 cinema exclusives.
Oh, shit. They look absolutely amazing.
Absolutely jizz on these.
Mate, look at that. Right, so you know I've got the original Blade Runner poster on my wall. I'm going to put these two up either side of that. That's going to look cool.
That is very cool. And Gemma, here we go. You've got, God, she's got the best. Okay. You've got a limited run BFI exclusive print of one of your favourite films.
Can I look?
Is it Mac and Me?
Okay, hang on.
What is it? That'd be awesome.
Oh my,
What is it?
What is it, Booge? I can't see it. Show us.
One Flew Over the Cookie's Nest.
That's probably worth quite a lot of money.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
Yes, Universal.
So this is from Aaron. Yeah, just a listener, he says. But it's not. That's more than a listener that sends us prizes.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank
he would
you.
Have felt bad getting us something that Mark couldn't get dirty off. Ugh, that's degrading. But he's one of our good friends from Universal, and it's nice that you've made such a personal effort for personal gifts. Keep your gifts coming. post them to us. Whatever you want to give us. We want free shit.
Please do. And we're getting so high on talking about our personal successes and our free shit that we've not even told you what's coming up on the show. Gemma, what's coming up?
So our review this time around is going to be the latest Disney Pixar film, Coco.
Oh, so all the listeners were waiting, sat by their iPods and their Sonos speakers and stuff.
We kept them dangling for 2 weeks.
Finally, we've revealed that.
We have.
And our topic this time is our top three movie deaths. And I don't care what you say, guys. I think that's the biggest amount of choice for answers you've ever had.
Yeah, the response on social media has been mental.
It's our most popular ever.
Yeah, hundreds upon hundreds of different
Crazy.
Responses. Different responses as well. Different names mentioned. It's absolutely amazing.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah. Because we were going to be reviewing Coco, I wanted to do a rewatch that was very similar, thematically similar. So we've gone with American Psycho.
I love it.
Yeah.
Peas in a pod, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing.
And it's going to be round two of our latest game show, Box Office Brawl.
Smash, bang, crash.
That's a slobber knocker, by God.
And the score, I believe, you got 12 last time, guys. We've got to beat that.
I reckon we will.
It's Team Barky Bark.
I
reckon we will.
I don't know. Or Team Men.
Nah. Marky
Mark. Ben. It's, Mark and Ben.
We're the pioneers. We're the founders. We're the brains. We're the beauty. We're everything.
Whoa. Yeah, say that.
Talking about beauty, on our masturbate this time, we've got Amy Adams, one of the most naturally gifted, beautiful actresses of our generation.
Hell yeah.
I can't wait to masturbate over her. That's to make it seedy, don't
and
I?
That's why, yeah, that's why spaces are so important.
Yes.
Spaces
space
it again.
It's not spaces.
Oh, no. Oh, damn. We've all done it.
Yeah, he has a lot.
And, of course, we've got all the other meaty goodness that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll take a list of questions. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. And we're going to give away some fucking ridiculous prizes.
There's going to be a lot of swearing as well.
Probably. Let's get started.
So, guys, the topic on today's episode is the top three movie deaths. And as I just said in the intro, I think it's one of those ones where there's more choice than probably any other topic we've done to this point.
Yeah.
So let's get on with the show. And Ben, give to me your first iconic movie death.
You know what's coming. It has to be Roy Batty in Blade Runner.
Shock horror, played, really?
Yeah. Never saw that coming.
Whoa. Played by the amazing Rutger Hauer. Of course, he plays a replicant. He has a 4-year life cycle. The Blade Runner, played by Harrison Ford, Rick Deckard, he's chasing him down. He leads him up to a rooftop. Batty then manages to knock Deckard off the rooftop, but saves him. Instead of letting his pursuer die, he pulls him up and saves him. And then he goes into this monologue because he realizes that he's dying. His 4-year lifespan is coming to an end. And that monologue begins with, "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe."
Oh,
and then it goes on. It goes on for a little while and it finishes with, "All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die."
Oh my God, that's so fucking poetic.
It still gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, because the whole purpose or the whole ethos of this film, it's about what does it mean to be human? And are these replicants, these machines or these robots, are they human? They've lived lives, they've had experiences, and that's what Batty's soliloquy is all about, the fact that all these memories, all these moments he has will be lost like tears in rain. And it's heartbreaking, and it's powerful, and it's amazing, and it's mind-blowing to think that Rutger Hauer ad-libbed the whole goddamn speech.
Are you kidding me?
He had a script, went, "Nah, not interested," and just did it from the heart, and it's legendary. Legendary.
I would kind of like to see what he was supposed to say.
Yeah.
And if the director's like, "Why are you going off script? This is not any good." And then realise he's come out with some of the most iconic lines in cinema history.
I think the original lines were, "You've got me, Rick. Uh-oh."
Spaghetti-o.
Oh, hi, Rick. But yeah. If you hadn't have picked this, I don't think I'd have known you at all.
Yeah.
It was the most obvious one, and I'm sure when it comes to me, you'll be saying the same. But yeah, what a great one to start with. Good luck trying to even get close to that, Poochie.
Hey, I'm going to do my best. So my first choice is from my favourite British horror film ever. It's Edward Woodward from The Wicker Man.
Oh, of course.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Not the bees. Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
That would be a great iconic one, though.
Yeah.
Those bees. That
it would be.
Looks pretty
those
damn good.
Bloody bees every time. But Edward Woodward plays Sergeant Howie, who's called to investigate the disappearance of a young girl on a small Scottish island. So we're going to fast forward to all the film. Yada, yada, yada. Blah, blah, blah. So, spoiler, there was no missing girl. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
Right? And it was a ploy to get Howie onto the island because he was a sacrifice for these people. Basically, they had a really shit year in the harvest, didn't get all the crops they wanted. So they were looking for someone who was pure, who was Christian, who was devout, who was a good person in society. And unfortunately, old Woodward fitted the bill. So his final destination to his death is to a great big bloody wicker man that's covered in wood. There's some livestock chucked in there, and he's dressed in all these white robes. And as soon as he sees it, he knows exactly what the score is. And he's like, "Oh my God! Oh Jesus Christ! Oh no!" He knows he's going to get done. So basically, you don't see the death itself, but what you do see is the villagers sort of torch this great big wicker man. He's burnt to a crisp. It's pretty much like Friday night at Nando's. And it's terrifying. It, you know, he's like a bad sausage at a barbecue. But it's so
many Jemmerisms
left, right, and centre.
Jesus Christ, one after another.
Backer. But it is just so
another one. Another backer.
So,
you know,
Wu Tang reference.
Oh, okay.
But it still scares me because you never see the act of him actually conking it. It is
conking it. Jemmerism.
Yeah, another
conking.
This is Gemcast.
So yeah, that's my first choice.
The thing is, it is a great death, and a lot of people obviously say that is better than the Nicolas Cage remake. But that being said, at no point in the original does Edward Woodward say, "Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey."
No, you can't grow honey in the ground.
It's clearly inferior.
And if you're not kicking a woman in the head, what's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah, which we don't endorse on Skip to the End podcast. No. Did you guys know on topic that they're actually building a Wicker Man ride at Alton Towers?
I did not.
I've seen this.
They've just announced it, so it's going to be a huge big Wicker Man. Like, the thing is with Alton Towers, they should have learnt by now, because they had a ride that obviously went down and people lost their legs and all this.
Yeah.
Horrible tragedy. I can't say. Very tragic. So, what do they go and do? Build a brand new roller coaster with wooden fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What it's going to go bad.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
Just the optics of that are terrible. You know?
I know.
Yeah.
Building something that's based on a disaster. What are you... I don't even...
They're not going to learn.
No. And creepy villages off a Scottish island.
Insane.
But we'll go on a skip trip. Well, no, I don't fancy Alton Towers.
I'm not interested.
It's the biggest letdown in history. Following that, not a letdown, my first choice is John Carthy. In The Green Mile. So good. And unlike a lot of the Stephen King films, we get a good 3-hour film to give us good character development. John Carthy, like the drink, but different boss.
Is he from Yorkshire?
Yep, he is exactly from Yorkshire.
The only Yorkshire tea. John Carthy.
Like the drink.
My God, we love this character because we find out he's not guilty. He was only trying to help these girls that were murdered. It's horrendous. Every warden on the ward is falling in love with him. He's helped cure someone's wife's cancer. He's helped everything. He's brought a mouse back to life. You are there falling in love with this character. And he turns around and he says, even though he's not guilty, he wants to go. He's fed up with this world.
I'm fed up with this world!
The lights are breaking. He doesn't even want the bag over his head because he says he's scared of the dark. That cut me to pieces, that bit. Absolutely heartbreaking. And we watch him executed. All of the wardens are crying. They're not professional. People are shouting, "You pig, you rapist," because they don't know the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to admit, I cried like a baby. I then went home and watched it on DVD at the time. I still cried. And I said the other day when I watched it again, it could go into my top 5 films. My God, I still cried like the first time I watched it. I miss John Carthy.
John Carpenter.
John Carpenter.
Oh, wicked thump like, lad.
It's heartbreaking, guys.
It is.
And it's that death that has stuck with me. That's the reason I've picked it. It's so... I just want to move on because I'm getting a little bit... You can see I'm emotional.
Oh. I've not seen that film in so long. I do need to revisit it because there's so many good people in it. Like Rockwell, we talked about last week, him being in it.
Yeah, everyone.
Oh, he's
brilliant.
Such a sweet baby angel.
We'll miss him.
We will.
Back around, Ben.
I'm a bit loath to say this one because it's kind of a big spoiler for a film that not a lot of people have seen. Mm-hmm. So the film is Cachet. It's a French film directed by Michael Haneke. I think back in the midst of time, we did our top 3 foreign films, and I believe I had it in my list.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you've not seen Cachet and you don't want to be spoiled, please skip to the end of this particular thing. I'll be talking for about 60 seconds. So in this film, there's a family, a kind of middle-class French family, who start receiving surveillance tapes of their own house, and they don't know why this is happening or who they're coming from. The patriarch of the house, George, he starts to think that it might be something to do with a guy called Majid. When George was a kid, his family took in this Algerian kid, Majid, and then George kind of fucked him over and Majid had to leave, so he thinks he's got something to do with it. He goes back and forth with this Majid, trying to work out whether he had anything to do with it. And then at one point, he goes to Majid's flat. And the shot, it's just a still camera shot. There's no camera movement whatsoever. It's a wide-angled shot, so you can see pretty much the whole of this Majid's living room, and you see George talking to him and Majid talking to him back, and they're standing up. And mid-conversation, out of absolutely nowhere, Majid pulls out a switchblade, slices open his own throat. This arc of blood just pisses out and hits the wall, and Majid hits the floor. He's just killed himself, just slit his own throat. and you don't know it's coming. You have no idea this is what's going to happen. And it's a no-fooling, what-the-fuck-has-just-happened moment.
Look at Joe's face. We're both sucked. I've not seen this film. No, and I'm like, what?
That's what I mean. Silence. That's why it's a damn shame to spoil it.
Oh, it's fine. I'll forget.
You will forget. Yeah. There are a lot of gut punches in this film, but this is the biggest one. And again, just to go back on how it's filmed, the fact that Haneke just left it as a locked-off shot. No camera movement, no cuts, nothing. It's just one shot, static. It's mesmerising and brutal and painful and unforgettable.
Do you know what the most annoying part is? I've got the DVD at home, so I bought it off CD Wow, which we've plugged a few times. I don't think they're going there.
It's back in the day, isn't it?
But it's a region-free DVD, which was hard to get.
Mm.
And I only got it because everyone told me, if you like sort of the films you like, you know, like Old Boy and this and that, you need to watch this film. Never got round to it. And I want to now.
Yeah.
It sounds horrible.
It is. I've ruined one good moment from it, but it's still a marvellous film all ends in, so you do need to watch it.
Oh, I want to comment more, but
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah, no, me too. So I'll go for my second one. So I'm going for a sad one this time.
Oh, not a happy death.
Not a happy death. Nope, there's no smiles on this one. But there's a reason why. So my second choice is Bambi's mother from Bambi.
Shame.
There is a reason. So this actually holds a very special place for me because it's the first film I ever went to the cinema to see.
Aww.
And I must have been a wee bairn, about 5 years old, 6 years old. I wasn't really familiar with the story of Bambi. So my mum took me and my sister one day to watch it. And obviously, we all know the fate of the Dib. At the time, I didn't. So when Bambi's mother gets shot by the hunter, I didn't see this coming. But at the same time, I didn't really have any concept of death. I didn't have a pet that died. I didn't have a close relative or a friend that died either. So it confused me as to why Bambi's mother didn't get up and go into the forest with him. I it didn't make any sense. And I do remember my mum crying. And I don't know, maybe it's the first experience of death I had, but for some reason it just holds a very special place with me. It's the loss of innocence, I think. You know, when something big as that happens into your life, you're never quite the same again. And I just find that really heartbreaking and how it really does reflect what life is. So, you know, I look at that as being a young, innocent adolescent to a bitter old bint that I am now.
Was that it? Was that the breaking point?
Yeah.
Wow. Done. Downhill from there.
And look what I have become.
Oh, dear.
No. This is personal, man.
Yeah, I meant, oh dear.
Oh.
Ignore
it. Should we just pretend?
Don't rise to it.
What's your next choice, Mark?
I've no idea.
Nope.
We need to take this up a bit, I think. It's a bit, it's
yeah,
a bit dark.
All right, come on.
My next choice is RoboCop.
Yeah!
Brutal.
My God, Murphy gets shot to shit. And that is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You will not see any other death in RoboCop as violent as the initial attack, pretty much right at the start when Detroit cop Murphy gets his head, his face, his body, his chest, everything blown to pieces. This scene should last about 10 seconds, which mostly would happen in any other film, any action film, any violence you should see for just the right amount of time. But in this way, I don't know why the director decided to show us for about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
His chest is blown more than you've seen anything blown to pieces in your life. This is like watching Robot Wars, but featuring his chest only being destroyed. Terrible example.
I don't know what Robot Wars has got to do with anything.
I don't know.
I just have this image of a torso going around on wheels.
It really is absolutely horrific. I've never seen anything as violent as this in cinema history. I genuinely believe that. It's disgusting. The blood and guts everywhere is just, it just doesn't stop. The shooting will not stop. And it stuck with me because I watched this when I was about 14. Mom, I know you're listening. I shouldn't have done it, but I went and found the DVD at my mate's house. We stayed up late and it scarred me. I was probably younger than that. I was probably about 12. My God, that violence is horrendous, but bloody good.
It's amazing. And it's a credit to how great the practical effects were.
Yeah.
Because it looked fucking nasty.
You mean they didn't really do it?
No.
Whoa.
I don't mean to spoil it for you, Mark, but apparently not, no.
We've spoiled a lot of films. I should have done like a thing. If you've watched any films ever to start this topic,
don't listen to this.
We're going to ruin it for you.
Top three spoilers.
Come on, Ben. Try and beat RoboCop.
Hans Gruber, Die Hard.
Boom. Oh!
He went there.
So, of course, Alan Rickman plays Hans Gruber. He's one of the all-time great villains. Because of that, he deserved a suitably great death. So everyone remembers that iconic image of him falling backwards from the top of Nakatomi Tower, reaching out towards Bruce Willis with his mouth agape. Yeah, exactly. Like Gemma now. You can't see this, people, but Gemma's doing a perfect recreation of it right now.
Can we do that as your next video? Just go and jump off a building?
Why not?
Yeah, a fake one.
No, Poochie died on her way to her home planet.
Nice.
And the thing is, Get this. This film is now 30 years old.
That's crazy.
Can you believe that? Oh, it's 30 years old. But the effects don't look that bad.
No.
He genuinely does look like he's falling off a building. It doesn't look as atrocious as you'd think a 30-year-old film would. But it's so memorable. I think it's one of those scenes that's so iconic that even if you haven't seen Die Hard, and I don't know who out there hasn't, mental cases, but there are people who haven't, but they would know this scene.
Yeah.
Everyone would know. Alan Rickman falling off a building, Hans Gruber, Die Hard.
Yeah.
And they, just to go off on a slight tangent, it's astounding to me as well to think that that was Alan Rickman's first movie role.
Oh my good God.
I think he was about 41 when he made the film, and prior to that he'd been a British theatre actor. He went out to Hollywood to make his dreams come true, and he didn't want to do it because he didn't want to, you know, he'd been a Shakespearean actor, so he didn't want to be some German villain in a big blockbuster movie, but he thought, oh fuck it, I need to get paid. And then of course, it's the thing that he's most remembered for. Whenever you think of Alan Rickman, it's the first thing that comes to mind.
I heard a rumour that, you know, that falling scene, apparently they didn't tell him when he was going to fall, so that look of shock is genuine.
Yeah.
Nice.
So he's like, oh, bloody hell.
Genuine. Oh, that's what he said.
That's very British.
Slow it down, you can see him actually say it in a Yorkshire accent.
Yeah, because his best mate's with John Coffey.
Ben, you've picked, like, the ultimate.
Yeah.
That won't be top. So should we just call it a day?
I don't know.
Oh.
Try this one for size. Samuel L. Jackson, Deep Blue Sea.
Great shout.
No one saw this bad boy coming. And remember, this is an A-list, bona fide Hollywood star who delivered probably one of the best performances in the 90s with Pulp Fiction. And very, very bankable too. His name in lights, you're going to get bums on seats.
Mm-hmm.
And what did this film do? It gave the ballsiest move since Hans Moleman from The Simpsons took a football to the nads.
To the groin. I love the way it's the ball to the man in groin.
Oink.
He basically gives this impassioned speech because these sharks are starting to get a bit smart and attack them. And he's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Samuel, what can you tell us? And he goes, well, tell you what, we're going to beat these sharks. We're going to do it. We're going to fight them. And here's how. And as soon as he starts spilling out his big master plan, this great big shark eats him up. One fell swoop, done.
I love it.
Great death.
It's incredible. And I've seen people that were replying on social media with the gif of that scene.
Yeah.
Magical.
Yeah. It's brilliant because you don't see it coming. It's so unexpected, but it's really funny as well.
Oh, it's hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Gets me every single time.
We need to do that as a rewatch one day because it's just
so.
A great film.
Yeah.
We never
so
will,
silly.
But I do love it.
You never know.
Well, it goes nicely with my next choice, which is Quint from Jaws.
Amazing.
What?
An iconic death.
I knew you were going to pick that one.
From the moment we see him with his nails on the chalkboard and we get introduced to the greatest, without a doubt, biggest badass person in real life and cinema ever to support a bandana with mutton chops. I'm sorry, but this guy is the greatest character for me in cinema history. I love the guy. He is destined to be the kind of hero, I think, from the start. You want him to catch that shark and kill the fucker. He's a born fighter, and you absolutely love him when he promises the whole of Amity that he's going to come back with the head, the whole body, you know, the whole works. You are like, this guy's going to do it. If anyone can, it's him. And spoiler alert, he doesn't. This shark gets so pissed off, it just gives in and goes, I'm going for the orca. I'm going to bite the back off it and I'm going after these fuckers right now. Even to the point that he's bit him, he's got his legs in his mouth, he's biting him, you're still seeing him stab him with a knife to the shark. Quint is not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
He's being dragged left and right. The blood is going everywhere. He's a goner. There's no way you're going to get out of this. You're inside the mouth of this shark. You can stab all you like. Within 10 seconds, you hear the crunch. The mouth is shut, and you just see him go, and the blood drips out of his mouth.
Yeah,
I know it's blood capsules. It didn't really happen, but it looks real.
It
looks
know.
So, so good. The amount of blood is horrendous, and then it just drags him underwater, leaves the trail of blood, and you do think that's it, because there's no way that Brody, because at this point, Hooper's gone down sea. He's on his own.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's just now it's bloody Brody's time, but it doesn't happen, and luckily Brody does save the day, which would be also an iconic death of killing the shark.
Mm.
But Quint goes out in style.
He does. Again, an instantly legendary character deserved a legendary death. And he got it.
I love Jaws.
Do you?
I did not know this. This is new information.
I think for Ben not to have Blade Runner and me not to have Jaws would have just been criminal. So we've delivered the goods.
Yeah, same with Bambi, really.
Yeah. You're always on about Bambi. Bloody hell.
Bambi this, Bambi that.
Bambi.
Right then, so what have social media come up with this time around?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. We've got a lot of new people come on social media, so welcome. We hope you enjoy the ride.
Stick around.
Stick around. There's a lot more coming. So we're going to start off on Twitter. So Beth and Joy Fisher, at Beth underscore Joy 90, said Randall McMurphy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
Ratso from Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
And Dobby from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Oh, I don't care.
I'm glad he died.
You shut your mouth.
I'm not a big fan.
Traumatic. Insert name at Shagwit82 said Darth Dog from The Beastmaster. He said it was the first thing he remembers crying over in a film.
He hasn't seen Green Mile then.
John Coffey, hey lad, about to die. Leon from Leon.
Amazing. My fourth choice to go out with that hero.
And Dennis Hopper from True Romance.
Oh, like a badass.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Weird With You podcast at Weird underscore With You said Professor X from Logan.
Yeah, oh, that's a great one, a very recent one, but a powerful one.
That might have spoiled quite for many people.
Oh, yeah. second choice was Boromir from Lord of the Rings.
Which one's that? Is that Sean Bean?
Yeah, of course it is.
Sean Bean knows how to die. Arrows. He dies in everything.
Yeah, Sean Bean or Sean Bourne. And Artax from Neverending Story.
Sorry, I'm going to go back to Sean Bean or Sean Bourne. What the fuck are you on about now?
No, because if you... The way how he spells his name is S-E-A-N-B-E-A-N, so it's Sean Bean.
Okay.
But if it's going to be Sean, then at least be Sean Bourne, you know. he can't have it both ways, is what I'm saying.
I suppose you've got something
there. Yeah, thank you.
Good Lord.
Chef Bake at Chef Bake 1 said Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon. Yeah. Darth Maul from The Phantom Menace.
Darth Maul went out like a straight up bitch.
So gutted. Not as bad as Snoke.
It's about the same. They both got cut in half.
Annoying.
Yeah.
I really like that baddie as well. Lucas got that right.
Yeah.
And the third choice was Terminator from T2.
Oh, the thumb going down.
Oh, don't, man. It's still too fresh. Jaster at Freaky H said, the end of the mist.
Oh, dark. So dark.
That gun free-for-all. Barbossa from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Don't give a fuck.
And King Kong.
Don't care.
What? Come on. Twas beauty killed the beast. Iconic.
Meh.
Sambly Moron at Sambly Moron said, meet Joe Black. And they said, that scene, then hit by not one but two cars. Tragic, but I laughed out loud so hard.
You don't see that coming at all either. That was like, boom.
Neither did he.
I don't know that I've ever seen that film.
It's brilliant.
Is it worth it?
There's a big death in it. I'll be honest with you, twice.
I don't think he's going to watch it. Second choice was Hans Gruber, of course, from Die Hard, and Drew Barrymore in Scream.
That's a great one.
Yeah. That whole scene.
The pre-credits scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Peter Pullman at Pete Kuru said Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That melting is horrible.
Mad Dog from The Raid.
Great.
And Emil from RoboCop.
Yeah, great choice. Mm-hmm.
And then M. Wynn at 1982 MW said Roy Batty.
Of course,
from Blade Runner. Wolverine in Logan.
Whoop. Again, spoiler.
Whoops.
Yeah, sorry.
Whoopsie. And I like this choice, Faisal from Four Lions.
Oh! When he blows up.
Yeah, with the sheep. Great death. And then we're going to move on to Facebook. So Joanne Cole said, Scar killing Mufasa to the wildebeest will always be our number one in The Lion King. Pennywise ripping off Georgie's arm in It, the new remake.
Oh, Georgie.
And the first scene from Ghost Ship. Now, have any of you guys seen Ghost Ship?
No.
Yes. Everyone gets chopped in half with a wire, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole lot. Like pretty good.
Like a human cheese wire.
It's pretty good, actually.
Sounds good.
The rest of the film's absolute shite. Ghost Ship, Ghost Shit.
David Roper said, Thomas Jane's son in The Mist.
Oh, yeah, it's horrendous.
He singled one guy out there.
Yeah, forget the wife.
Yeah, and the old people. Jack from LA Confidential. Moving very quickly on.
Yeah.
And I just got 7. I didn't get any particular death, but maybe all of the
all
deaths.
Of them.
They were all so good.
Yeah. Bill Boswell said, poor old Bruce in Jaws 2. Smile, you son of a bitch. Emil after this acid bath in RoboCop. And James Woods in Cop. So then, Instagram. So we got Danny at DannyS1186 said, Michael Clark Duncan from The Green Mile.
Yeah.
Carl Weathers from Rocky 4.
Oh my god, that would probably replace one of mine. Yeah. That's really sad.
And then we've got another spoiler, Harrison Ford from The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Brutal, yeah.
And then the very last one, we got Ricky Hill at Ricky Hill 22 said Peter Weller from RoboCop, Rutger Hauer from Blade Runner, and this is opening old wounds, the aunt from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh no.
Hold it, auntie.
That's so sad. Right, I'm going to go and cry for a bit. Who's doing the next topic?
It's me.
Oh, what you got?
I love it when we spit vitriol. So on the next episode, we're going to talk about our top three worst on-screen chemistry.
Nice.
Oh.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye. Remember me, don't let it make you cry. For even if I'm far away, I hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me.
We've been to see Coco, the latest Disney Pixar film, directed by Lee Unkrich from Toy Story 3 and Adrian Molina. A young boy, Miguel, dreams of becoming a musician just like his deceased musical hero, Ernesto de la Cruz. However, thanks to a family past burned by music, he is forbidden to play. Following the urge to perform, Miguel finds himself transported to the colourful land of the dead and discovers he must find Ernesto to enable him to get back home before he turns into a resident. This journey will involve friendship, dark secrets, and the key to a locked and tragic past.
Ooh.
Right? The film has voice work from Anthony Gonzalez, Gael Garcia Bernal, and Benjamin Bratt, to name but a few. So it's a bit of a different one. We do quite a lot of dramas, quite a lot of thrillers, some comedies here and there, but we have not done, I don't think we've ever done a Disney film for a main review, have we?
I can't remember.
I don't think we have.
We do very few animations.
Mm,
yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rare one. So I'm going to throw it to Mark first. Mark, Coco or No-No?
Do you know what? This film's a weird one because I think for the first 45 minutes it was shite. I was bored. Mm. I had no kind of... it just built up all about Mexico and all this, and I just wasn't gripped. I was thinking, this isn't the Pixar that gets me usually and the characters I'm falling in love with. I was bored. But the last 45 minutes I really, really enjoyed when we went to the sort of City of the Dead and saw these stuff. It just took a long time. But visually, it was a masterpiece. Pixar know how to do their stuff. It did look absolutely beautiful and awesome. But it's just not got that imagination and creative kind of characters that I'm so used to with Up and Toy Story and the classics like Finding Nemo. They're just lacking something. I think it's not that hit that they've been... I think it's time they bounced back with something that made us all talk again. And I think this isn't the one for me.
Okay. Ben?
Well, I wasn't looking forward to going to see it at all, to be honest, because I kind of feel like I'm done with Pixar now. I feel like I'm at the point where they're just churning out sequels for one thing, and anytime they bring out something new, it doesn't give me much more than I haven't already seen. So I wasn't looking forward to it at all, but I must say, I was absolutely blown away by it. I loved it. I loved every single second of it. I thought the colours were beautiful and gorgeous and vivid, and I thought the music was fantastic, which we'll talk about momentarily. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'm shocked.
I know.
It's about emotion, it's about love, it's
everything
about
you
hate. Family and everything else, and it's just, this isn't the film I thought you'd like.
But it's also about death.
Yes.
And I like death.
Good.
There's a reason why people get excited about any Disney Pixar release. And I must admit, when this was released originally, I kind of brushed this to one side because I thought, oh, so we're getting a new Incredibles film. Oh, great, a new Wreck-It Ralph film. Huzzah! This is exquisite. Everything down to, forgive the pun, the bone of the film, being the colour, the music, the characterisation. Even the voice work is fantastic. Gael Garcia Bernal, particularly as Hector, was an absolute highlight. It's funny, it's spectacular, and it has one of the biggest hearts I've seen for a Disney Pixar film. Emotively told, and such a wonderful story.
Can I ask you one question before we get into it?
Okay.
How many times, because I know you very well, did you cry? I want the truth.
Okay, do you want the truth?
Yeah.
Three times.
okay, I knew you'd be crying.
I saw
you in the cinema and I saw you wiping your face, but I thought, it's not that hot in here. I didn't see how many times.
I held it together. So obviously, we're going to talk about one particular big point that I think is probably the big sort of emotional piece of the film. And there's also a reveal that got me. But there was one point I started to get upset because I knew what was coming. I was like, oh no. So yeah.
You were crying a lot.
I'm a big crabby bear.
Wuss.
But Ben, you loved it. I'm shocked. I'm genuinely shocked.
I didn't cry.
No.
But I was very moved by it. I thought it was gorgeous. Let's talk about the look of the film. The colour palette is extraordinary, especially when Miguel goes down into the land of the dead.
Oh my God.
It's really bright and colourful, but I love those kind of creatures that are there, the kind of spirit guide type things that are neon, this bright neon colours as well. You can't take your eyes off it. It's mesmerising, the colours.
It just bursts out the screen, doesn't it? It's vibrant and it's enticing, and I suppose in a way it's designed for the family. So of course, adults are going to watch it because they're going to want a good story. They know what the recognition is with Disney Pixar. But of course, it's going to keep kids' attention. But we're not going to talk about kids. It just looks amazing. Like, the whole neon thing is attractive. It's spectacular.
It was only on the last episode I said I didn't want to go down the route of 4K. I didn't want to buy films and get a new player. I'm going to. This film needs to be on 4K when you're watching it at home. It looked unreal, and I've said it before on the podcast, but I swear they gave me colours I've never seen before until now. I thought that there's probably so many million colours. Pixar found another 10 billion and added it in, but it's just absolutely beautiful, and I need to own the best. Like with Blade Runner, I'm going to have to buy a 4K player, and I'm going to do it. That's 4K, Sony, Philips, Panasonic, Samsung, LG. Any fucker out there, please send me a player, because I will plug you to death.
We want it. Did anyone else get kind of a Beetlejuice vibe from some of it as well? Yes. When Land of the Dead, I was purely about that.
It was like a theme park that I wanted to visit.
I think if... in the future, cinemas are listening. You should serve nice Mexican food in the cinema. You should have some shots of
tequila
and cocktails, because I just really did want to get up with my maracas and dance around and eat some nice fajitas. And I just did. Did you not get that vibe?
Should we see how many Mexican things you can name?
Yeah, go on.
I bet he runs out. I bet he says spaghetti in a minute.
Garlic bread.
Nando's.
I'm exhausted with it all, but yeah, that Mexican rice.
Oh dear.
But yeah, I just felt it did make me feel very good, and I have since gone and looked at the soundtrack. It's stunning. All those songs that work so well on screen sound just as good at home.
Generally speaking, I cannot abide the sound of children singing. It goes through me like
it's the worst noise in the world.
It's awful.
Like a pneumatic drill on the side of a road.
It makes my skin crawl. It makes me feel actually like I'm going to vomit.
It's like Robocop. His chest is just bursting
it's
blood.
It's like kryptonite.
It is the worst, most vile sound on earth. But this kid, Anthony Gonzalez, who plays Miguel, has a magnificent singing voice.
Yeah.
I was mesmerised by it. And I think he only sings maybe 3-4 songs. But every time he did, I didn't want him to stop. Normally, I want them to stop instantly. Just stop singing.
Enough.
Done. But I wanted him to continue because I loved his voice. And I kind of like mariachi sounding guitar.
I love mariachi music.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I dug all the songs in this. Which, you know, I never normally do, you know me.
But Ben's going to be there next week listening. What we're not going to download this year, we're going to Mexico, Mexfest.
Speaking of which, it is the only film that I know that Disney have employed all Mexican actors. There's one white actor, which is John Ratzenberger. He's kind of like the lucky charm of Pixar.
Yeah.
But every single character is of Mexican or Latin American descent. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
I read a lot of reviews as well, and there's a lot of people from Mexico saying how proud they were on the way they represented their country. They weren't doing the stereotypical over the top. They said it was really well respected and they really appreciate how much detail they went into. Beautiful.
Yeah, and because of that, it's now the highest grossing film in Mexican history.
Fantastic.
Not just highest grossing animated film, highest grossing film, full stop.
Wonderful.
Crazy, eh?
That is.
The whole story itself, I thought, was just such a lovely, simplistic and original story. I love the idea about how they honour their ancestors by putting their photos up. I really dug that story. And of course, it leads us to possibly one of my favourite characters in the film, which was Hector, played by Gael García Bernal. Now,
awesome.
Bernal, I kind of associate him with Itu Mama Tambien, like this raging, horny teenager who likes threesomes. But over the years, he's matured a lot, obviously, with his roles. And the voice work he did with Hector was just simply beautiful. You know, you kind of liked him instantly. He was this sort of like little lovable rogue that tried to get himself back into the land of the living. But when you find out why, I was not prepared for my heart to be shattered into a million pieces. Should we talk about the twists?
Go on, tell him.
Okay, so Hector is not just Miguel's friend. He's actually his great-great-grandfather?
Something like that.
Yeah. Something.
But he's related to him. He thought he was just a mate, and he thought Ernesto was his grandfather in reality. No, Ernesto de la Cruz. He was actually the big bad villain, and he is a murderer. A goddamn dirty murderer.
Dun, dun, dun.
And it's quite dark for Disney, I thought.
It is, and that's why it's one of the few Pixar films or Disney films at all that got a PG rating as opposed to the Universal rating we normally get. Because it's about death. It's a film about people dying and how, especially children, how children can process the idea of their loved ones dying. It's quite sneakily touching in that way. It's not just a bright and colourful film about, you know, weird little skeleton men.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of, I think it would help children kind of understand death.
And you know what? I'm all for it. You saw me. I mean, God, I had to deal with Bambi, but I think this is a much more friendlier approach on doing it.
When we left the cinema, I think I rung my mom and just said, I love you. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, this film has just showed me what family means. And she's like, are you all right? I was like, yeah, piss off now. Bye. But I just, I felt for 5 minutes. It was just made you realise, doesn't it?
If any of that actually happened, I'm Bill fucking Gates.
Clear some money, dude.
So, oh my God.
But can I ask a question? Because I'm not the brightest spark out there.
What?
And I was left scratching my head at one point. So I didn't understand how he actually went over to the land of dead. Because he strummed his guitar, and the next thing I know, he's a ghost. So what was it that set him there? Because was it just strumming the guitar?
It's because
did I miss something?
I think it's because the guitar was owned by someone who was dead.
So as long as you play their instrument, that's all you need to do.
Yeah, I think it was because he was. It wasn't because he played it; it's because he was nicking it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So having that, so is that just enough.
Because he was nicking the property of someone who was dead, he became cursed. So he went to the land of the dead.
You've got to be careful what you take now, anyway.
You know, and he was also in that tomb as well. So that technically, there's a bit of a dead body in that room.
Yeah,
so.
It just felt a bit weird. Like they just suddenly went, "Oh, okay, I'm now in the dead world." I'm struggling. Most kids didn't and they got it. I'm there going, what?
I'll tell you something I bet you did like. The attention to detail. So when you see any of the characters playing guitar, they're playing the real chords.
The actual, exactly.
They could have just had blurry hands doing any old shit, but they're actually, you see their finger work, they're playing the real chords, the real notes, which I thought was amazing.
It is. And get on YouTube and watch the making of, because if you love that guy's voice, he's there in the studio, like we are with the mics, and I can't remember the word mics, bloody hell. And he's just the singing his heart out, this kid, and you watch him really getting into it and dancing. I was thinking, this is why it comes across so well in the actual film.
And the attention to detail of Coco herself, blown away. Just every wrinkle, every skin tone, every movement is all thought out, and especially towards the big emotional heart of the whole film. So, of course, I'm talking about when Miguel sings to Coco the song Remember Me.
Oh, God. As I say, I didn't cry, but if I was going to, that would have been the point.
Yeah.
Because that was moving.
Bald like a baba.
You were so wet.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
Okay. From the eyes, you were.
There we go. You know what? Sometimes the secret to comedy is timing. Just a thought.
But you were absolutely drenched, and I thought, bless you.
Oh my
God. Carry on. So you were crying, right?
Yeah. Crying from the eyes.
This is the moment that got you the most wet.
Stop it.
Stop.
Leave it be.
Why is he carrying on?
Just save me. I'm in your tears, drowning. Yeah, you were very upset at this point, Gemma. This is the bit where I really did notice you crying.
So it was a sad, happy, sad kind of feeling. My God.
Only we could do this on a kids' film.
So.
I'm going home. You guys take over the show. I can't do this anymore.
So the whole song is absolutely moving. The lyrics are absolutely beautiful and gorgeous. And it's a real tribute to someone that you're going to say goodbye to, but you don't want to forget them, or you don't want someone to forget you. And it ties in beautifully with the imagery of putting a photograph onto the shrine to allow the souls of the dead come back to you for one day of the year. This song, this song is beautiful. And it's a reason why Disney is so goddamn clever at how they write their music and their lyrics.
Yeah.
Just
magical.
It was nominated for, but didn't win, I think, the best original song at the Golden Globes. It will be nominated for the Oscar, and it will be one of the favourites. The film, however, absolutely will win best animated film. It's a prohibitive lock. There's nothing else that can touch it this year.
Do you know what song beat Remember Me to the Golden Globes?
No, go on.
This Is Me by The Greatest Showman.
Fuck off. That's one of the worst trailers I've ever seen.
It's the film.
I don't want to watch it, and I think I never will. Oh no, you need to give it a chance. It's brilliant. No, I've seen the film on the trailer.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Shite.
I wasn't blown away. It was pretty much the trailer, but just extended.
Yeah,
with a bit of fancy footwork.
I'm glad it's going to get the Academy Award.
It will do. This will.
Yeah. Watch it now and not get it.
It's not going to be that fucking film Ferdinand starring John Cena. Have you seen that?
he didn't. You can't see him.
Nice.
True.
Thank you. So.
You know, when we do a review, right, and we get
kind of all cocoed out.
We get change, and we always say, like, I went into this going, the first 45 minutes bored me, and it didn't. I was quite negative, and you guys do this sometimes, and you think, actually, I'm being arrogant. It was actually bloody good. It just took a while to get going. It was a lot of... It was half an hour until stuff really kicked in, but once it did, I forgot the original 30 minutes. That's the power of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what happened and how they got there and what went on.
I forgot everything I watched.
Yes.
Oh, shall we score it?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right, go on, Mark.
God, now you've made me go from probably like a 6 to a...
What?
No. At first, because I was a bit negative, but you kind of just made me love it again. It's an 8. Yeah, let's go for an 8. Yeah. That's nice.
Bloody hell, that is a job.
Yeah, why not? 8 out of 10.
Okay, go on, Ben.
Oh, it's an 8 for me as well. I adored it.
Oh, nah, sod it. It's a 9 for me. I think it's absolutely beautiful. And a gorgeous animation piece. And I'm very excited to see how it's going to completely knock everyone out of the park at the Oscars. So Coco gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
I've got myself a brand new watch, so I don't need to ask what the time is. It is competition time! And if I'm going to buy a watch, it'll definitely be a Rolex.
That's Rolex.
Imagine they sent us some fucking Rolexes. Or, that would be awesome.
Or Tagger. I'll take either.
Or Swatch, or anything cheap.
Swatch. Like, one of them, like one of those Casio ones that you can change the TV channel.
They're cool.
You get like 20 quid off, boom.
If you'd listened to our incredible last episode, number 87, one of our greatest episodes, I think, and the social media went crazy for it, you'd have heard some good prizes up for grabs. So kicking things off, we had Dark Bunny Tees that gave us a couple of Baby Driver tees, and I'm wearing one now, look.
That one's amazing.
Sexy.
That one there.
The question we put out there to win this was, who directed Baby Driver? Gemma?
Edgar Wright.
He did. And Jamie Wilson is going to win the first one. And the second design is going to go to sports_fan. So those two, when you get them, I want to see them on social media. I love seeing people. You've seen people this week with their prizes.
Mm-hmm.
They bloody love it. I'm loving it.
We had that one guy who recreated the Baby Driver scene.
Yes, Tim. And that looked great.
That was very cool.
Also, they've given us the brand new It t-shirt. Who played Pennywise in the 2000, whatever it
last
was,
year.
19.
Last year. Oh, no, well, the original one.
The original one.
Oh, Tim Curry.
He did. And Johnny C. Edwards has got that right. So you're going to get that t-shirt in the post. Our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere also gave us a couple of cool t-shirts. A Big Lebowski one. What drink is the dude drinking throughout the Big Lebowski? Gemma?
White Russians.
It's true. And the winner is at S77Tux. And you're going to be getting that t-shirt in the post. And again, I want to see pictures. And to tie in with our beautiful rewatch of The Shining, we have the nice design that you own.
I love it.
What rating did we give the rewatch? So, Ben?
8 out of 10.
We did, and at Mikey Cubed is going to win that Shining t-shirt. Our great friends at Funko, my God, they gave us some awesome pops for The Shining. So we had Jack, we had Wendy, and we had that little annoying shit Danny.
What? He's amazing.
He's not.
You shut your goddamn mouth.
Real simple question, who plays Jack in the movie?
Jack Nicholson.
It's true. And Danny Bennett's on Facebook got that right. Really nicely with the masturbate, we had some Tron Pops, which is bloody lovely. Have you seen them? They glow in the dark.
They're amazing.
They are very cool. If you're listening, send us some extra because we would all love those a lot.
Oh, yeah.
What year was the movie released? Ben?
Oh, God knows. I don't know.
It's the best year ever because it was also the famous year that your film came out.
1982.
Perfect. Great work. And Gareth Drake, via email, is going to get those in the post.
Email, you say?
I know.
Oh, what was that email address again?
It's podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Ah.
And finally, our iTunes ratings. All you had to do was leave us a 5-star rating and you won all the pops that we were giving away. Really, really simple. Ratcatcher99 gave us a 5-star rating this week and just simply said, just listen to the last episode, I'm a new subscriber, and you're the best podcast out there.
Aww.
I love that. You've just come along and you've won yourself some pops.
Ratcatcher gets
beautiful.
It. Beautiful. He does.
But enough about the last episode. It's time to move on. Forget the good in the past. And now we've got some great new prizes. So first off, we've got Last Exit. And I said to them, to tie in with this, what's your favourite death scenes? And they said Robocop. So look at that for a brand new, awesome t-shirt. The OCP.
Yes.
Classic design. Let's say, who plays Robocop in the original? Really simple.
Yep.
Not the new one.
No.
Have any of you ever seen the new one?
Yeah, it's not good.
It's terrible.
I've refused to watch it. I don't know why, I'm just a bit stubborn about it.
No, keep being stubborn, it's terrible.
Then they also said that Alien was one of their favourites. And look at this, the actual beer design from the bottle. How cool is that? We'll be tweeting and Facebooking and Instagramming these, but these are really cool designs. Let's say who directed the original Alien. Really, really simple. Our good friends Dark Bunny Tees have given us a brand new design. They've done a Mr. Chewy Porg scratching. So cool. That's quite cool. Let's say...
pretty good.
Who directed who tried to direct The Last Jedi? Yep, is that fair? The best part is coming up, guys. We've got some Cocoa Pops to give away. Yep.
Cocoa Pops. I get you.
Nice. Look at these.
I literally thought you had like some like cereal
Our
lined up.
Our amazing friend That's Sully very cool. has pulled these out of the bag. Look at them. Just look at them.
What characters have we got there, Mark?
We've got, I can't pronounce these.
Remember.
We've got Hector.
Yeah.
We've got Ernesto.
Yeah.
And
Miguel.
Yeah. Thank you.
Don't help him.
Sorry, I'm
Speech
sorry.
Speech therapy's coming on really well.
I feel like I needed to. Look at him.
And we'll chuck in a bag of the mystery minis as well. Really, look how cool they are. All the colours, and they're beautiful. What rating did we just give Coco? Really, really simple. But, as always, we want to reward those people, not the ones that just go on Twitter to enter our competitions, those people that listen and love this podcast, and they go and take the time out to leave us an iTunes rating. You will win the full set of the Cocos. That's what I'm talking about. Simple, really easy. The best way to go on and win these prizes is to go on our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, and as you heard today, you can win via email. Go on skiptotheend.co.uk. All the links are nicely, really simply laid out on there, and we'll announce the winners again in 2 weeks' time.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, that section of the show where we pick out a name from the pot and we wax lyrical about our favourite performance from said actor or said actress. So on the last episode, we picked a lady. Yes, we picked a lady.
A lady.
And her name is Amy Adams. So a lot of picks there from her catalogue, but which ones did we pick ourselves? So I'm going to throw this over to Ben first. Ben, Amy Adams, your favourite. 1, 2, 3, go.
Amy Adams is one of the greatest working actresses. She's great in everything. She's a 5-time Oscar nominee.
Wow.
But the film that does it for me is American Hustle, and her performance is Sidney Prosser.
Oh, she's
beautiful.
Good. She's good.
She's so good. She's amazing in this film. And the reason why this stands out from her exceptional back catalogue is I've never before thought of her as being a sexy woman. She's a beautiful woman, don't get me wrong. She's a striking woman, no doubt. But in this film, she's sexy. And I'd never seen her play those colours before. Not only is she sexy, she's also whip smart. She's usually several steps ahead of the supposedly smart men around her. But it's the fact that she puts off this sultry, almost femme fatale-esque vibe throughout the film that really draws me in. Especially when she's pretending to be this Lady Edith, this fake English character that she's made up to work all these scams. It's just an absolutely knockout performance. And quite rightly, she was nominated for the Best Actress Oscar for this role. She didn't win, because at this point, she's basically the female DiCaprio.
Mm-hmm.
5 nominations, no victories, you know. But the thing that always makes me laugh is when we think about how good she is. It's a relatively recent phenomenon, her being this big name. Because if you think back, what, 10, 12 years, something like that, she was Jim Halpert's girlfriend in a couple of episodes
of The
Office.
Crazy.
The cheerleader.
Yeah, she was the handbag saleswoman, wasn't
That's
she?
Right,
that
yeah.
Michael tried it on with and bought a coffee machine for. And she's come so far since then and had 5 Oscar nominations and will have many, many more, I'm sure. She's absolutely brilliant. One of my favourites.
Yeah. American Hustle was one of those films that I didn't think I was going to enjoy when I first watched it. But it's so, like, everybody in that film is phenomenal. You know, you got your Christian Bale, you got your Jennifer Lawrence. But Amy Adams, I do agree with you. I think she is the MVP of the film. Absolutely wonderful.
Sexy is the right word. And I'm not being degrading to women because I hate that. But honestly... she's absolutely stunning in that film. I've never really been so... I can't say turned on. I'm just saying she's...
Oh, go on.
No, she's just absolutely gorgeous in it. She really is. And it's the first time you see that. And you're very, very right. But she's up against some big wigs in that. You've got the big man himself, who we're going to be talking about on the rewatch very soon, with a big belly.
And he had a big wig on too.
What's his name?
Help
Christian
me.
Bale. Christian Bale. Thank you.
That big wig. But you're not acting against anyone. You know what I mean? The big wigs. And she stands up on her 2 feet and she delivers one of the best. And it annoyed me. I didn't realise when you just told me then that she didn't win an Oscar. I don't know why. I just assumed because I see her name at every awards and she's always clapping and looking good in a great dress. I thought she'd won.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off now.
I know. And you're right when you say she was up against big names. That year for this film, all four of the leads were nominated for that film. So she and Christian Bale were nominated for the Best Actor and Actress. And then Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper were nominated for Supporting Actor and Actress. And David O. Russell, who directed it, he has this way of doing that. It's his second film in a row, I think, where his four leads got nominated for the four acting awards, which is crazy.
Says it all, really, doesn't it?
I want to watch it again.
Me
it's
too.
Great. It's great.
Me too.
It's a rewatch in about a year.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Stick it on the list.
Oh, what a choice.
Yeah, so Mark, what's yours?
It's the same director. It's Charlene Fleming in The Fighter.
Wonderful choice.
What a great, great film itself. And again, up against some really big, big talent. But for me, this is the first time I saw a different side to her. I think she had to be kind of bold and kind of this really loyal woman to the man, and she had to be there at the worst times. Let's be honest about it, that film is not nice. The guys she's hanging around with are not nice people.
Yeah.
But she gives this performance that I think she just completely shone above everyone else in the whole film. She looked great, but she didn't have to. It wasn't about being beautiful. She just, I don't know, she just made me realise that she could be the strong leading actress, and I can't believe that she didn't get an Oscar.
Yeah.
But she did lose out to Melissa Leo. Yeah. In the same film, so it got the award it deserves. But Ben, you just said there about David O. Russell, he has this thing. He creates these intense characters on screen. He doesn't do anything by halves.
Yeah.
And I think in this film, everyone shone. But for me, she shone above everybody else. And she's up against Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
One of the best. And I love Marky Mark. I genuinely do.
She is so good in this. She's this tough, feisty Bostonian woman. And you just wouldn't want to fuck with her.
Why can't I use words like that? I'm trying to say, like, she's bold. And that's a big word for me. And he just sums it up perfectly. But she wasn't afraid to take a swing. She's kind of trailer trash because she's around those people that are his sisters and all that, and there's loads of them. There's about 10 of them, and it's really intense, and they're constantly swearing. And Mickey's not a nice character, let's be honest about it. He's horrible, but she just puts up with those relatives, and not many people would. Most people would be like, do you know what, you're not worth it, I'm out of here. But she sticks around, and she comes across well and flying with colours. I bloody love her.
Good old girl, isn't she?
Bloody amazing.
Good old girl.
Give her an Oscar. Next time you give an award, do it for this.
It will be like when Leo won, when Amy Adams finally wins one. It'll be that sense of relief. Thank Christ.
Yeah. I'm glad she didn't win it for a rival.
Yeah.
So, my choice. I'm going a little bit left field here. I'm going for Giselle in Enchanted.
Oh, good choice. Very popular choice.
It's funny because Amy Adams, I think, well, you two have kind of tested to it. She is such a formidable actress. But MMD, or Movie Masturbate, is all about our favourite performance, and this one just brings me so much joy. She plays a typical Disney princess who gets banished to the terrifying and scary world of New York City. And Adams plays a role with such gusto and enthusiasm and wide-eyed wonder, and there's a real playfulness to Giselle herself that always makes me think that this character is probably referencing Adams in real life. She sings throughout the film. She's got a great set of pipes on her. You know, she ain't no one-hit wonder. She's really, really good. And the growth that Giselle actually experiences throughout the whole film, it's really heartwarming. You know, she really does develop as this sort of girl that is sure of herself. She's independent. She's no longer reliant on, you know, a charming prince that comes off and sweeps her off her feet. She's like, no, I want a date. I want to get to know you. You know, we can't just get married on the first meeting. I mean, who does that? Ugh. And that is quite creepy, to be fair. Why do you want to get married 24 hours after meeting this great big gorgeous guy? No. But it's a testament that Amy Adams is a real all-rounder. She's very versatile in her role. She's very likable. And this character is just so captivating. I always watch it and I just smile whenever I see her on the screen.
It's perfect casting because she genuinely does look like a Disney princess
really
come to life. You could imagine her being a real-life Cinderella.
Yeah, she's so pretty. She's so beautiful in this film.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there either is or is there's going to be a sequel called Disenchanted.
There will be.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's good.
Oscar time for next year. No.
If she wins for fucking Disenchanted, I give up.
That's the thing they'll do, though, because they have to. I don't think that Leo should have got it for The Revenant. It's good, but he's lying on his back moaning about being bitten quite badly.
Yeah.
That's not the Oscar winning film.
No, it happens sometimes. It's like when Denzel Washington won it for Training Day.
Yeah.
That was an over the top hammy performance. He's deserved it for several films prior and since, but not that.
It's like on the bottom, it's engraved, we owe you.
Yeah.
Oh, I've really enjoyed this one because it was just so... Did you find it hard or were you locked in straight away? Because when I saw the ones coming from social media, I was thinking, shit, she's done a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't locked in straight away for me. This was one of two or three that were kind of edging. And then I watched American Hustle again a couple of nights ago. I was like, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah. Same here, this was not the first choice.
Let's hear then what the social media came up with.
Olivia Creighton on Twitter, @LivCreighton, has said Amy Adams could star in a toothpaste commercial and I think it was worthy of an Oscar. So true. She's so great in everything, but I think my favourite is Arrival, which Mark clearly doesn't agree with. She made that movie worth watching. She is great in that film. It's not a great film. It's a disappointing film, but she's excellent in it.
I think I need to watch it again. I think we watched it once and we didn't love it.
We wrote it off, didn't we?
It's Villeneuve.
It's our boy Villeneuve. Yeah. Man. We need to give it another go.
But it's a masterpiece.
I wouldn't go that far. Maddie on Twitter, @MaddieHFC, has said, if I can only have one film, I'm going with The Fighter. She fucking owns every scene she's in during that film. Just like Mark said.
That's it. Nicely put.
It's very, very true. On Facebook, Ashley Wolf has said, Big Eyes is my favourite film of Amy's. It's not as well known as her other films, but her performance is fantastic. I haven't seen Big Eyes.
No, and it's directed by someone quite famous.
Tim Burton,
yeah.
It's got Christoph Waltz. It's all right. It's quite an enjoyable
good.
Film.
That should be great.
Yeah.
Back on Twitter, Christopher Alden, @ChrisAlden, has agreed with me. He said American Hustle, great performance and dresses to kill. She does dress incredibly well in that film and never wears a bra, just saying.
Yep, she has a plunging neckline.
I've been watching Friends again. It's on Netflix at the moment. I forgot that Rachel never wears a bra.
And she's always got high beams.
Yeah.
High beams? What's high beams?
Think about it.
Think about it. Context.
Think
what do you think
it.
High beams are going to be?
Oh, I see. Pointy nipples.
Well done. There we go. Well done.
She learns something new every day.
Trying to use a euphemism. She just uses the actual words. Fine.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying watching Friends again.
I bet you are.
Yeah, it's really good.
Staying with Twitter, Beyond the Box Set, @BeyondTheBoxSet, have said she should have won the Oscar for her first nomination for Junebug. She's been great since, but that performance is the definition of star-making. It's a really small indie film that came out around the time that she was in The Office, in fact. And it is a brilliant, brilliant performance. I'm guessing you guys haven't seen it.
No.
Seek out Junebug, you'll love it.
Cool.
Done.
So I Married a Geek on Twitter, @MovieGeekCast, has said, easy one, love her. And I'm emphasising that because it's in capitals. Love her in Enchanted.
Yeah.
Still a huge one in our house. She's with you, Pooch.
Yeah.
NickyNack96 on Instagram has said, I love a rom-com, so Leap Year always makes me smile.
Oh, is that one with Jack Black?
No.
Oh, he's done something like that.
It's where she asks a dude to marry her.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a leap year, like the film suggests. Mm.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
I'm sure it's got like 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
So yeah. But, you know, if you like it, Nicky.
Yeah.
Good for you. Lost in Translation on Twitter, @AnnaStelline. Her role in Spike Jonze's movie Her has a very special place in my heart. It's a small role, but a pivotal one.
God, she's as good as anything in that, and it's literally about 5 minutes. Beautiful.
Still worth it.
Oh, that film.
Sambly Moron on Twitter, @SamblyMoron. I adore Amy Adams. I also absolutely adore The Muppets, so it has to be The Muppets.
That is a great film.
Never seen it.
It's really good. You'd enjoy it.
No, won't.
It won an Oscar. I'm not kidding you. It won an Oscar.
For the music.
Yeah.
Brett McKenzie,
Man or Muppet.
From Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah. Really good.
But it was a weird year, though, that I'm sure that year. Usually there are 5 or 6 nominees for each Oscar. There were 3 nominees, and 2 of them were Brett McKenzie for the Muppet. So, he had a bit of a shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He had a shoe in for sure. Yeah.
But good on him.
Yeah.
And then finally, back on Twitter again, 20 Word Movie Reviews @20WordMR, The Master, which is one I thought one of us three would have, actually. Stole the show, in my opinion, he says, against some seriously strong competition.
That's Paul Thomas Anderson just delivering the goods.
So good.
And as 20 Word Movie Review said, strong competition up against Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, the master himself.
Come on now.
Oh, that's a hell of a cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad, is it?
I'm horny. You've heard it. I just want to masturbate. So, not even try and get rid of it any other way. I want to masturbate. So, Ben, help me out. Or Gemma.
It's not
which
me,
one
is
of
it?
You?
It's my turn.
Get your hand.
Do you want a drum roll, Gem?
Please. Okay. Ooh.
Oh, that was underselling.
Yeah, yeah.
So, on the next episode, we will be masturbating over Harrison Ford.
Yes!
It's rewatch time, and our rewatch this time round is American Psycho. American Psycho is the story of Patrick Bateman, an image-obsessed Wall Street banker at the height of the extravagance and opulence of the late 1980s. We follow Bateman through his hollow and materialistic life as he descends into madness, murdering friends, foes, and strangers alike. But has Bateman's mask of sanity really slipped, or is it all in his mind? The film stars Christian Bale as Bateman, as well as an ensemble cast including Willem Dafoe, Jared Leto, Chloe Sevigny and Reese Witherspoon. It's based on the 1991 novel by Bret Easton Ellis. And before we get into the film, I want to ask you, have either of you guys read the original book, American Psycho?
Unfortunately not.
I can't read.
You're missing out, because it's truly, to use your copyrighted word, Mark, it is a masterpiece. It's one of my favourite, it's probably my second favourite book of all time.
Wow.
So I was so excited when this film came out to see how it would translate. But we'll put that aside for the moment. Let's talk about the film in its purest terms. I'm going to start with you, Gemma. What are your thoughts on American Psycho?
It is a dark, satirical look on material consumption in the 1980s, and it is so much fun to watch. Who knew that murdering people would actually be a bit of a laugh, a bit of a fun watch, but at the same time you feel, but it has that emptiness when you watch it too. It's a very strange and conflicting emotion you go through when watching this. Mm. Patrick Bateman, to me, is almost like the anti-hero you should not be cheering for. He's doing his own thing. He is so self-obsessed, to the point of narcissistic even.
Oh, he is, yeah, absolutely.
Massively, but it portrays greed in this weird and dark humour twist that, hell, you gotta love Christian Bale for it. So for that reason, I love Christian Bale, but Patrick Bateman absolutely terrifies the willies out of me. But such a fun film.
Mark.
These performances from every person in the film are wonderful. This film is wonderful. Christian Bale is above that. He is superb. One of the greatest actors of our generation, and people don't realise just how talented he is. Watch everything he's been in. He's never the same guy again and again. He is unbelievable. And as this character, like Gemma just said, and I can say it, he scares the willies out of me. He's terrifying. I don't know if I love him. I don't know if I loathe him. I don't know if I lust for him. I'm not sure. He's horrible. He's absolutely grotesque at times. Yeah. He's fucked up. He's like a schizophrenic. He's so away with the fairies.
Yeah.
But he can turn it on and just be absolutely normal. The most important businessman. Quite Bruce Wayne. Really kind of the man himself. I fucking love this film, dude. And it reminded me just how good films can be again.
It's a great film, and it's a magnificent performance by Bale. And he is an empty shell. He's an empty suit who can be whatever he needs to be for whatever given scenario he's in. He can be the glad-hander in a business meeting with his higher-ups. He can be the guy knocking back whiskies at Dorsier, if he can get a book in at Dorsier. You know, he can be that guy. Or he can be the guy who's staring at himself in the mirror, pulling off his face mask, saying that he doesn't really exist, he's not really there. That's cold and terrible. Yeah.
You know, funnily enough, one of my notes here, the scariest moment for me in that film isn't to do with the hacking and the chainsawing. It is when he is pulling that face mask off.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing behind the eyes. He's soulless.
And he is emblematic of the whole film, or what the whole film is trying to represent. It's about the vapid emptiness of the materialistic 80s. And one of the great portrayals of that is the fact that all the guys look the same. Multiple times throughout the film, people mistake Bateman for other people, Halberstam, or, you know, other guys, because they've all got the same glasses, the same suit, the same hairstyle, the same tie, the same power business cards. You know, it's just empty. They're shells. They're nothing. They have no intrinsic value.
Yeah. Even when he claims to be Paul Allen, nobody blinks an eyelid.
Yeah.
No one.
Ben, so you're the one here that's read the book.
Yes.
Okay, and I know that you're going to go into this in great detail. I read a lot of reviews for this film. It's nice to see what other people think. And a lot of people say that Bale's performance at time is annoying because it's too comical. It's not like the book. Talk to me, because you're intelligent and you know it better than anyone.
I disagree entirely, because I think what a lot of people don't realise about the book is it's... A lot of people take the book as a horror, like a really dark, horrific thriller. It's satire more than anything else. So the fact that Bale brought out the inherent humour in that, I think, is perfectly acceptable. And I think there are things that he does in the film that aren't in the book. So, for example, when he first murders Paul Allen and he turns on the music and he's talking about the song and then he does a little dance, a little wiggle.
That's so good.
It's hilarious, but so in character.
Yeah.
It's not in the book, but it works and it doesn't betray the book in any way. There's nothing about this film that does the book a disservice.
Yeah.
I don't think. And Bret Easton Ellis himself isn't a huge fan. He doesn't dislike the film, but he prefers the book, obviously, because he wrote the fucking thing. But it's mainly because the book, you're reading it from Patrick Bateman's point of view, and he likes the whole unreliable narrator thing. You never know that what he's telling you in the book, whether it happened or not, whereas in the film we're seeing it happen, so it's making the implicit explicit, and I don't think he likes that so much. But I get where he's coming from, but I think it's a great companion piece to the film. It's one of my favourite books of all time. It's one of my favourite films of all time. They both work.
So is it watered down? Because I've seen so many people saying, oh, it's not as gruesome as this. What fucking standard film do you see a bloke kick a dog to death with his heel in the street? I can't imagine it being too watered down. I don't get it.
No, it is. There are some really horrific deaths.
Okay. Like,
on the film, you don't see Paul Allen killed. You see him with the axe and then swing the axe, but you don't see the axe hit Paul Allen.
Yeah.
You don't really see much carnage. You see him, when he attacks the running off prostitute, you see him drop the chainsaw on her, but you don't see it hit her.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, it describes everything in gruesome detail, dismemberment and stuff. So it is much more gruesome in the book.
Even with the models, you just see him converse and say things that you hear, but the models obviously don't hear when he says he's into, like, murdering and just decapitating.
He said he's into murders and executions.
That's
but they think he said mergers and acquisitions. Yeah. Because, again, it's about the me 80s where people weren't actually listening to anything anyone else said.
So good.
One of the first scenes that really kind of caught my attention is when he goes, and we just mentioned, kills his dog. But before that, he's there kind of being an arsehole to a tramp. It's just not nice. He's just being a bit of a douchebag. And this is the first time that I recognised how good this kind of setting and cinematography looked. I thought it looked like Gotham at this point. Mm. Okay, so I'm seeing the street. It's panned out. He's done a very, very horrible stabbing to this tramp who didn't deserve it. He's just asking for some money or some food. He kills the dog. And this is something I had to note down. He walks off and his coat flies out a bit. And I thought it looked like a cape. And I turned round and I said to my wife, and that's why you cast this guy as Batman. Because he stood there, it waved out, and it just looked like Batman. I swear the director thought, that's absolutely why I'm going to cast him. And Nolan, if you did that, let me know, because that's awesome.
So rather than Batman, he was Twatman.
Yes, but it's true. And that's when I thought to myself, you are like a superhero at this point.
Well, Batman Begins came out, I think, 3-4 years after this. So he would have been cast within probably a year of this coming out. Something
there you
like
go.
That. So it could well be.
You know what I mean?
Could have been
watch
the thing.
That scene again on YouTube, guys. You'll know what I'm talking about.
His performance is unbelievable, though. It's one of sweaty desperation, mixed with complete and total mania. You never know where his mind is going to be at any one point. I think Bale's crowning glory in his film history is that scene towards the end of the film where Bateman is in his office and he's on the phone to his lawyer confessing to all of his crimes, and he's manic and he's sweating and he can't seem to control himself. And Mary Harron, the director, she's got a locked off shot close upon him. It's pretty much only his head in the frame. So all you can do is focus on Bateman's madness and Bale's terrific performance. It's mesmerising.
And it's uninterrupted too.
Yeah.
It doesn't sort of interject in any way, shape or form. And you expect, in that kind of scene, you expect him to repent for his sins and all of a sudden be so apologetic. But I found that scene almost, he's bragging. It's the whole sense of that, you know, utter contempt for other people. I did this. I killed about 20 or so people. It was a brag. He was proud of what he did. But again, Bateman smashes it out of the park. It's funny, you know how we talk about sometimes, oh, I wonder if so-and-so could do this.
Mm.
Could you really imagine anybody else in particular playing the role of Patrick Bateman?
And do you know who was supposed to play it before?
I really want to hear.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Whoa! Oh. See, I could just about see that, but not as good as him.
The stories I've heard is that DiCaprio dropped out. I think his agent or his manager or whatever said to him, this could be career suicide, it's too out there, it's too crazy. You won't be able to be that handsome leading man ever again. Whereas Bale went, fuck that shit, I'm doing it. Let's talk about some of the individual scenes. The scene that I love and is undoubtedly, if I had to list my top 10 film scenes of all time, it would be in there. It's the business card scene.
Yeah.
It's a dick measuring contest, but in business card form. They're just laying down their business cards, which to the naked eye look identical. They did. They're all just white with black writing, but it's like, oh, it's bone, it's eggshell, it's off-white. And when Bateman pulls his out first and he's so proud of it, and then the other guys pull theirs out, there's that look of barely concealed rage on his face that one of the other guys has a better business card than him. It's fucking hilarious.
Do you know what the worst part about that is? I've seen people that are that shallow that do that shit, especially in my fucking workplace. You see people that do this stuff and it's embarrassing. Like you said, when you see that next one, oh, it's eggshell. And he's just instantly been pissed on. He's literally at that point like, I can't compete. And he can't just then pull out a new one. My God. But it did make me actually think I want a nice business card at that point. I thought I need to have it. And I like the holders.
Yeah.
Really cool. But yeah, he just gets pissed on and you know he's going to get revenge for that.
Of course. But isn't it funny how these materialistic things, when how you mentioned about how everybody looks the same, do you really remember any of the characters because they had a particular style of business card? Or do you remember the character that fucking killed everybody? Yeah. And it kind of determines how our actions are much more important than anything we decide to buy and own. Just the whole theme of satire is just perfect. This is the perfect example of satire.
Yeah, and it's so well delivered, especially because it was directed by Mary Harron. So Mary Harron is known as being something as a feminist. She's not done a hell of a lot since this. The most recent thing she did is she directed all six episodes of Alias Grace, which
such is a good show.
A fantastic show. And people joked at the time when this came out that it was a film based on a book written by a misogynist, directed by a feminist, because people don't like Bret Easton Ellis. They claim misogyny all the time with his work because they don't realise it's satire. Mary Harron did, and she made it work.
A character that I really loved in this film, and I think she was almost like the moral compass of American Psycho, was Jean, played by Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah.
Now, she's a great actress through and through. You should check out stuff like Boys Don't Cry. Even she's like one of the best things about American Horror Story Asylum. Absolutely wonderful. But what I love about Jean is she is the most fragile character in the whole story. She's the character that isn't consumed by buying goods or money, making the world go round. She is just there simply to do a job, to get money, to kind of better herself, but not in a way where she has to buy eggshell business cards. Mm-hmm. We see a slight bend in her character when she goes on a date with Patrick. They try the dossier. No room, unfortunately. So she's all dressed up to the nines. But after her life was almost spared by getting a nail in the head with that little, what was it, like a paintball gun or a nail gun?
Yeah.
That's not a nice way to go, I hear. But afterwards, when she realises that this isn't going to work out and Patrick's like, oh, I can't kill her now, bollocks, she goes back to how she was and she is the shining light of the film. She is the goodness. She's the heart. She's the positive of a world full of arseholes.
Is she in anything else recently?
Recently?
I've not seen it. And it's one of those people that you give a performance like that, you're up against one of the best actors in the world and you are still doing well and they just kind of fade away.
She does a lot of indie films. She does a lot of small budgeted
films. It's a shame. She should be up there getting Oscars and stuff. It's an amazing performance.
She's an excellent actress and she's kind of the audience surrogate because, like Gemma kind of touched on there, she's the only normal person really, isn't it? And I think Bateman notices that when he's geared up to kill her and he realises that he can't. She's too pure. Mm-hmm. And he says to her, you know, you need to leave her or else I'm going to do something bad.
You don't want to get hurt by me.
Yeah.
As much as this film is so, so violent, did you realise that it only got the rating in America of the 17 at the time? It's not like 18 over here. For the actual sex scenes, it wasn't the violence that gave it that rating. So when we see the prostitutes taken back, that's a bit bizarre because he's obviously asking them to perform sexual acts, but he's not that interested in what's going on. He's more interested about putting on a show for himself and he's putting on his music and giving them loads of facts about Phil Collins that they don't care, being asked to do sexual stuff. And then when he is actually having sex with them, he doesn't care what they look like or what they're doing in front of him. All he cares about is his own self in the mirror, working out, showing his guns, just looking how great he looks. And it's just like, you are so mental. Absolutely gone from another planet.
That scene where he's shagging that prostitute and he's looking in the mirror, just flexing and staring at his own biceps is tremendous.
While Sue Studio's playing in the background aggressively.
It's just amazing. And it's just, it's on another level. That at that point, you're just like, where is this going to go from here?
And you never know until right at the very, very end. Was it real or was it a fantasy?
Well, this is it, you see. This is the question. It's called American Psycho, the book and the film. Is he a psycho because he killed all these people? Or is he a psycho because he thinks he did? Because there's no evidence, either way, in the book or the film that he actually did any of these acts. Was it all in his head? No one ever witnesses anything he ever did. The police never actually come for him, despite his paranoia.
True.
So has he got very lucky? Or did he actually do all these things and or did he dream all? Who knows?
What was the show? It wasn't Neighbours or Home and Away, but someone just woke up and it was all
Dallas.
It's a bit Dallas. Like Dallas. The checkout
Bobby.
Scene.
Was it Bobby?
So it's just Bateman waking up at the end going, oh, Back to scanning. Oh, well. Did that really happen? What do you think, Ben? Do you think it really happened?
I think it's all in his head.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you look at things like the fact that he kills that woman with a chainsaw
in
the public lobby of an apartment building, the fact that he blows up... Remember when he blows up the police car with like a pistol? And even he looks at the gun like, how the fuck did I just do that? You know, I think all the signs point to the fact that he's just demented. And there's a bit near the start of the film where you see him take open a pill bottle from his cabinet in the bathroom. So I think he's on some kind of psych meds. I think he clearly is. Like, he has, like, narcissistic personality disorder, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he is mentally ill, but I don't think he is a murderer.
Yeah, ideas of grand delusion. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely, I agree with Ben. I think it's all in his head.
And let's be honest, if any guy in the world held a gun to a cat's head, Gemma would be there straight away to whip that away and say, get off!
Roundhouse to the chops, how dare you? Leave the kitty alone.
It also contains one of my favourite lines in film history. And it's actually a line that was taken from the book, but improved. And I think that's true of a lot of the book. The script is a very streamlined version of the book. They do a great job. So the line I love in the film is, I think my mask of sanity is about to slip. I think that's such a famous, great line. But the line in the book is much clunkier. It's, my mask of sanity was a victim of impending slippage.
No, film did it better.
It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well, does it? So I think Harron and the screenwriter did a great job of streamlining a really dense and intentionally repetitive novel. I think it's a really minimalist work of art, actually. Really well done.
As far as the other performances go, obviously you said William Dafoe and Reese Witherspoon.
Witherspoon is a chain of pubs.
That's a big fan. Yes. Do you know what? I bloody love some free stuff. I go there 5 days a week.
They're very brave because those people have gone on and done very serious films. I look at Reese as being kind of that sweetheart of America. You see her in great films, even stuff like Cruel Intentions, stuff like that. She's still the sweetheart. To go and do this film was quite brave. And when you said, Ben, Leonardo DiCaprio's agent wasn't great for him signing up to this, I'm quite glad that those agents for those people went, do you know what, Will? Do you know what, Reese? Go and have a fucking good time on set and enjoy yourself, because this isn't what you're going to be doing in any other films after today.
Yeah, a lot of people wouldn't allow their music to be used. So we know he talks at length about Phil Collins and Huey Lewis and so on. In the book, he talks a lot about Whitney Houston. And they went to Whitney Houston to use her songs in the film. She was like, no chance.
why there's like an orchestral version of it, isn't there? Yeah.
Amazing.
So those people who actually were willing to do it. And it's crazy. I think it's not that old, this film. When did it come out? 2000 and something or other?
2000.
Yeah. So we're talking 18 years. That's fucking hell. That's a whole adult. That is quite old. But now, I don't think actors would consider that. I don't think they'd worry about, is this going to ruin my image? People realise that kind of shit gets you noticed.
Yeah.
So it's weird to think that 18 years ago, people were like, I can't be involved in something like this. It's going to ruin my career.
Isn't it nuts?
I want to know what your neighbours thought, Ben, when you were cheering in your house at Jared Leto dying. You must. I know you loved it in Fight Club, but you must love this in another whole other level.
I do, especially because he's such a smug prick as Paul Allen in this film.
Yeah, that face and that hair, that kind of curtains, and you just want to punch his... I'm not being violent, but you just want him to be in a car.
I have grown to love him a little bit now, because he's in Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah. He still sings to kids about relationships.
He's still a guy in his mid-40s, dressed like a man in his 20s, singing to 14-year-olds, which
and
ain't
right.
Look how
that turned out for some of us. Anyway.
Pregnant pause.
Anything else?
No.
Are you spent?
I'm spent.
Good.
And I think we should score it because I need to return some videotapes. So, Gemma.
A big, strong, psychotic 9 out of 10 from me.
It's a perfect 9 from me. It's unbelievable.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck it. It's a 10.
Here
it's a 10 out of 10. I goddamn love this film. Wow. So that means a skip to the end, 9 out of 10 for American Psycho.
Right then, guys, it's hard because we've been on a good run. We've had The Shining and now we've had American Psycho and we're only 2 episodes into the year. I want to top it. So I've gone and picked a film that I think everyone of our listeners would have seen.
Okay.
It's been voted the top 10 films of all time on IMDb, on Total Film, on Empire. It's one of the greatest films ever made.
Can I guess?
No.
Oh, so it's not Deuce Bigelow?
It isn't. And I believe the time is right for it to have the skip to the end treatment. So on the next episode, we'll be rewatching Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yay! My goodness! That jaunty little ditty suggests it's now time for round two of our latest game show, Box Office Brawl.
Nah. I feel like we should have some sound effects about people being punched and smashes and crashes.
Or like some glitter cannons or I don't know. But on the last episode, myself and Ben were a team and we scored 12 points.
Team Bemmer.
Not bad.
Team Bemmer. So this time around...
Oh no, it was Team Booch.
It was Booch. Oh, that's so cute. Anyway, yeah, game show voice on. So this time around, Ben and Mark have joined forces and they fused themselves together.
Like Voltron.
Yes.
And they're going to work together to gain as many points as humanly possible. Yes. But how does it work? Well, guys, it's a good job I'm about to tell you. Hopefully with no confusing scoring system. So, paying homage to the game show classic Play Your Cards Right, we're going to do it with movies. So, I'm going to give you guys 20 films of cinema history and use the worldwide box office takings as the representation of those giant-esque cards. You've got to guess whether those takings are higher or lower than a nominated film I'm going to give you. So, the scoring works as follows. So, you get 1 point for everyone you get correct. So that's quite good.
Easy.
But there's a potential of getting some bonus points.
Nice.
So when you get 5 answers correct in a row, you're going to get an extra point. The maximum points you can get on this game is 24 points.
I'm confident we'll get that.
24 British points.
Yep.
Quite big.
As someone with mild OCD, it annoys me, 24. Yeah. I mean, it's not a round number.
No. If you get to 24, you get an extra point, so it's 25.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Right, so guys, are you ready for Box Office Brawl?
Yeah. I'm so intrigued what the first film will be to set it all off. Mm-hmm. That's the interesting part.
Well, I'm glad you asked. So our starter film is Flight of the Navigator. That took 18 million.
18?
18.5, you know.
That was robbed.
18.5 million dollars worldwide. But did Showgirls...
Showgirls.
...get classic. Higher or lower than Flight of the Navigator?
See, what do you think, Mark? Because I think there would have been a lot of pervs like me and you.
A lot of pervs. That's horrible.
Who would have gone to see that.
Yeah.
But it was like an 18, you know, an R-rated movie.
I'm definitely going higher.
I can see you. Yeah, I can see your trousers moving.
Right.
Are you happy with that?
Slightly higher. I feel like I'm... Slightly higher. Go on.
Slightly higher?
Yep.
And you're right, you've gained your first points. Well done.
We're going to kill
Showgirls, believe it or not, got $20.3 million.
Brilliant.
Possible rewatch choice.
Oh my god.
My
sponsored by Kleenex.
That's Kleenex.
Oh, lovely. So
that'd be good, actually. Get loads of bog roll. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. If you're listening, Kleenex.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Let's just use this game to get as much free shit as we can.
I usually buy my toilet roll from Wilkinson's. Wilkinson.
I do some Morrison's at Morrison's, yes.
Are you ready for your next film?
Always.
Yeah. Right, so Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Did it get higher or lower than Showgirls?
See, it bombed at the box office, but I still think it did high. Worldwide, it would have done more than 20 million.
Yeah, it must have.
Surely.
It proper flopped.
Yeah.
I'm going higher.
Yeah, me too.
Going higher? Another point!
Yes!
Well done!
We're killing it, dude.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim got $47.6 million worldwide.
That's a shame.
I know.
Worldwide.
I know.
Shocking.
Should have got more.
Such a great movie.
We love it here, and we hope you do too. So, moving on from that, we've got our next film. Your next film is Whiplash. Now, did it get higher or did it get lower than Scott Pilgrim?
See, it's a small indie film, but it was a big Oscar player.
I kind of think it's lower.
Yeah.
Because I think it hit off in videos and DVDs and Blu-rays. But you go with it. You, whatever your heart tells you.
Whatever your heart tells
you. I think it might be a tad higher, but you said lower first. I'm going to go with
you. Sure?
Yeah. Yeah, because if it's wrong, I can blame you.
Okay.
We go lower.
Yeah.
Ben, blame Mark.
Yeah! Oh, what a twat. What do I have left here?
I knew we should have gone with what you said. I said, Ben, you take it.
It is higher. And you know what? Ben is absolutely on the money about this. Ever so slightly higher. $48.9 million worldwide.
She's screwing us. There's not any big differences.
Oh.
I was fair.
Oh, wah.
Oh, whambulance.
That's ambulance.
So, the bonus points, we're going to have to wait for a while.
No. Fuck's sake.
However, I'm going to give you your next film. So, higher or lower? Did Casino get higher or lower than Whiplash?
So, Whiplash got what?
48, was it?
48.9 million.
Again, it's going to be like an 18, an R-rated movie, which do lower.
Oh, it's tough.
It's not one of Scorsese's biggest movies. And his movies, historically, don't actually make that much money.
I'm letting you choose because I don't want to be blamed. So it's all down to you. I'm passing it.
We
we're a team. We're a team. But fuck you.
Right, okay.
I'm passing it.
I'm applying some psychology to this. I think it's higher. I do think it's higher. However, I think we've had a few in a row. I think Gemma, it's the yeah. time in the game where she would fuck us.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, it's lower.
It's higher.
Oh, God. You were useless. I knew it was higher, blatantly.
$116 million.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, deserved.
It's a good old film to some good old takings. But enough about that. I need to give you your next film right now. So, John Wick Chapter 2. Did it get higher or lower than Casino?
I think it did really bloody well.
Me
so
too.
Higher.
Yeah, I'd say higher.
Yeah.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Back in the game. Well
yes!
done. Of course it did. It got $171 million. It got higher than the first film.
Good.
Can't remember what the first film got, but we're not doing that one. Anyway, next one. So, well done. You got 3 points at the moment. Everything to play for.
It's whack.
Feels like
we only got three.
Is that all?
That doesn't sound right.
No, yeah. I thought we had three in a row at the start and then another one.
Yeah, can we go to instant replay? Because that sounds like bullshit.
Are you sure?
So, 3 points. Everything to play for.
Definitely.
This is only the beginning. You guys can smash this. I believe in you. You know, go for it, team, whatever. But the next one. So, we've just had John Wick Chapter 2. Pan's Labyrinth. Now, did Pan's Labyrinth get higher or lower than John Wick Chapter 2?
I reckon lower.
I think lower. I don't think that was a big box office film. A critically acclaimed film.
But then people heard about it and went and bought the Blu-ray and DVD. Yeah, definitely.
A tad lower, probably.
Oh, God, your discussions are bang on. Well done.
Yes.
Point to you guys. Yes, it did get lower and it got $83 million.
That's good.
Not so good for Del Toro's bank account, but never mind about that. So the next film we're going to go for is Paddington. Now, did Paddington get higher or lower than Pan's Labyrinth?
It killed it at the box office, I think. And the second one is doing great business at the moment.
I'm definitely saying higher.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so right. Well done.
Yeah. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so.
Sometimes.
Never.
So if you get three more right, you've got that bonus point.
Oh.
Imagine.
So come on. I think you guys can do this.
Let's do this.
I have good feelings about this. So from Paddington, we're going to go to John Carter. Now, John Carter. Remember Paddington got $268 million?
Yeah.
Did it get higher or lower than Paddington?
See, John Carter bombed at the American and UK
box
office.
One of the biggest loss ever.
That being said, oftentimes films that bomb at the main box office can succeed in places like China.
Mm.
So my instinct is to say lower, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did better in other markets.
I'm taking the reins, it's lower.
I agree. The Roman reins, let's say lower.
Oh, sorry guys.
Oh, shit!
It got higher. Yeah. $284 million.
That's mental.
I bet that was China. That was all China.
Oh, yeah.
Blame China. Yeah.
Or not, we are your friends. So
I don't think we have any listeners in China.
We might. Don't assume.
Diplomatic immunity.
It's a big country.
If you do listen to us, let us know.
Yeah. So from that, we are on 5 points. I still believe in you. I think you guys are going to smash this. Okay. So from John Carter, we are now going to Straight Outta Compton. Now, did it get higher or lower than that $284 million that John Carter acquired?
It's hard, this.
My instinct is lower.
But a lot of people liked it.
Yeah, but also, you know, you're only really going to go and see it if you give two shits about NWA.
You
know.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
Let's go lower.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good move. Well done, guys.
Yes.
You've acquired yourself an extra point, so you're now on 6. So yeah, Straight Outta Compton did $201 million worldwide. So, your next one. The Grand Budapest Hotel.
You probably went to see it about 150 times.
I'm so twee. I'm so twee.
So hold on. What did Straight Outta Compton do?
$201 million.
I want to say lower.
I don't think Wes Anderson films do that much
lower.
Money, as great as they are.
Somewhere. And they don't go to like Odeons or Views and stuff. You have to go and see it at an art house or as independent. Lower.
Yeah.
Oh, well done, boys.
Yes!
An extra point for you. So we're back on that route of getting that extra point. So, okay. From the Grand Budapest Hotel, we're now going to go to Disney Pixar's Cars, the first film.
Now, Cars is an absolute piece of shit. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen of any type. But it would have done a lot of money, I thought.
It's done shitloads. And they've made three of them.
Yeah.
So
they wouldn't have kept making them if they weren't making bang.
Higher.
Well done. Yeah, absolutely. And you'll be astonished to hear when I say it amassed $462 million all across the world.
I'm not astonished.
It's so
That's
shit.
Par for the course for Pixar.
It is the worst. It's the worst of the worst. So we are over the halfway point. So you guys, 5, 6, 7, you've got 8 points. Well done.
Mate, we're on
it. Good.
This is good. So your next one. Les Miserables, or Les Miserables?
The one with Hugh Jackman.
The one with Hugh Jackman, absolutely. Did it do higher or did it do lower than Cars?
Now, there are a hell of a lot of dipshits in the world, and dipshits love musicals.
They do. We respect the opinion of all our listeners.
Not the dipshits.
But not the dipshits. Lower.
What was Cars?
Cars was $462 million.
I've got a horrible feeling that this might have done something mental, like, okay, 600.
So let's go with you, because the last time that we've gone with mine twice, yeah, we failed. Okay. So let's go with yours to keep the streak alive.
All right, higher.
Oh, $441 million worldwide. It's lower.
Oh, tits. How much lower? What was the other one?
Cars was 462.
She's shafting us. It's like, you know,
that's pretty
good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, okay. We're not going to do the streak.
It's okay, but come on. 5, 6, 7, 8. You need 4 more points to equal or 5 to beat last week.
Come on then.
You can do this. So, from Les Miserables to Batman Forever. Did it beat $441 million worldwide? Or did it do lower?
Now, the problem is this film came out ages ago and I don't imagine these figures are adjusted for inflation. No. So, it might have done more in real terms, but...
I want to say lower. It's shite.
Yeah, but a lot of people see shite.
I know. My DVD collection, mate. Honestly, yeah. Lower.
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Trust me, that's a Blu-ray piece. Lower.
We're saying lower?
Come on, Ben. You fucked up last time.
All right, lower.
You're right to go lower. Well done. Yes.
Trust in Mark.
$336 million worldwide. I don't know why. Never mind. But we are coming towards the last quarter of the game. So you guys have got 9 points. It can be done.
Yes.
So
I only need 4 more points to beat me.
He's looking in the mirror right now. His pecs, yeah, while saying that.
Whilst listening to Suicidio by Phil Collins. So your next film, from Batman Forever, we're going to go to Jurassic Park, The Lost World. Is it higher or is it lower than $336 million?
That's Jurassic Park
Second
2, isn't
one,
it?
Yeah.
It is indeed, yes.
I reckon it was higher.
I'd say higher.
Final answer?
Yep. Yeah.
You're right to go. Yes! Well done. A whopping $618 million
mental,
worldwide.
And it's shit.
It's a bad film. So from one bad film to possibly another, it's Interstellar.
Oy vey.
So.
That did really bloody well. Really well.
Yeah, but
well.
Did it do $600 million well? That's the question. That's a lot of bunts.
My heart says say go higher. Yeah. Honestly, because he's Nolan. He makes a lot of bunts.
And the thing is, we're in the minority of people who don't like that film. Most people
I watched
did
it again
like
the other day. I really enjoyed it.
No, you're wrong.
Honestly, that could make the topic of films that grew on me the next time.
Dog shit.
No.
Fuck.
Let's go higher.
Okay.
Like they did in the film.
I don't think it is. All right, fine, yeah. Higher.
Higher. Well done.
Yes,
it got $677 million worldwide.
We're awesome.
So well done. This is good. So
we're on 11 now, is it?
You are on 11 now.
Nice. So one more to tie.
One more to tie, but we're on 2 right answers so far. And I want you guys to get the bonus points.
Come on then.
Okay? Ooh. Right, so next film. Gone Girl. Higher or lower?
That made
lower.
A ton of money, but
it
nowhere
did, but
near
it
as much.
It can't be that
lower.
Much, surely.
Well done, yes.
Yes!
So 12. We are a level pegging now.
Yes.
Okay, so from Gone Girl to another big film, Prometheus. What do you think?
Ooh, see... It had piss-poor reviews, even though it's a great goddamn film. It had piss-poor reviews, so I think it would have had bad word of mouth, so I think it probably did a bit lower.
I believe you are correct.
I'm afraid it's higher.
Oh.
I'm afraid
hell.
It's higher. $403 million worldwide.
That's all right. We can still win.
You can still win. Just need one more. That's it.
How many we got? How many?
Right, you now have one. We have 3 films left.
Right.
Ben, if we don't get any more points, we're doing it so the listeners then have more suspense to tune in next week because we're equal. Yeah. All right.
Oh
cool.
My god, right. So great
cliffhanger. Yeah. We love giving the listeners yes. cliffhangers.
The next film,
keep them dangling, you know. So the next film, from Prometheus, we're going to go to The Exorcist.
Fucking hell. Everyone went to see that because it was the film that got banned, and I reckon that's high. I reckon everybody, inflation and shit.
Yeah. Oh fuck it, let's say higher.
Yeah.
You are in the lead!
Yes!
13 points, well done. Yes! The Exorcist has got $441 million worldwide.
Brilliant.
I've beaten myself.
Yes.
it's a hell of a feeling to beat yourself off.
You do it most nights. And we've got 2 more?
You got 2 more, so this is now just for prize.
Come on,
so,
Ben, let's just smash it now.
Mm-hmm. From The Exorcist to Twilight, the first Twilight.
Oh, twice shy.
Oh, damn, everyone went to see that.
So I didn't.
Yes. So, did it get higher or lower than The Exorcist?
Christ, it pains me, but I think higher.
Yep.
justice is done. You're wrong, but it didn't get higher than the Exorcist.
Good, I'm happy to be wrong.
Great.
So that got $393 million worldwide. Wow. That is money that will never be seen again. So we're going to move on to the very last one. This has been a brilliant round, so why not end it with a great film, Django Unchained. Higher or lower?
So higher or lower than what? 300 and what?
$393 million.
See, Tarantino films don't tend to break the 100 mil in the US. So then we're expecting it to get another 200 mil elsewhere.
I'm going lower.
Yeah, I think a tad lower.
I wish you didn't. $425 million.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Good news for Tarantino, but even better news for you guys, you got 13 points.
Nice.
Oh, I don't know about you, but I'm spent.
Massive. It's hard, isn't it? It's really bloody hard.
So next week, it's going to be the team of Poochie and Mark, or as I call them, Team Pork. to see if they can beat me and Mark's current score of 13.
It's now time for some good old listener questions. And you know, you can come for us from many different social media platforms. So let's kick things off with a bit different. A bit of difference. Let's learn to talk. Do whatever you can. Instagram. God, this is not an easy one. It's Feng Schwitch. And he has said, skip to the end of being nabbed by a TV company and you're all doing it now on the big screen. That would be cool. Like, you know, Wayne's World.
That would be awesome. Cool.
But now we have sound, we have vision. What's the actual set going to look like? Is it going to be like Ben's front room, you know, taken from like the Friends sitcom, so they recreate it? Or are you going to go to new levels and do stuff like the bar at the Overlook Hotel, the Outpost 31? What do you guys think it would look like? That's a great question.
Yeah. See, I think you've nailed it there by mentioning Wayne's World. So that's what I'd want. Because on Wayne's World, when their show gets picked up by a TV station, they just recreate Wayne's basement in a TV studio. So I want an exact replica of my living room, but at Pinewood Studios.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think it would be anything else other than what we sit in right now. You know, we grab ourselves a cider, we sit around a table, we have a chat, we have a laugh. Yeah, it can't be anything else.
A brother's cider.
Of course a brother's cider.
Big time.
You guys have seen the film Tusk, right? And they're all around that table doing the podcast. And that's the one good bit about the film. They're all podcasting in their own little studio. Smodcast, who you've heard from Kevin Smith, do like a big poker table in his shop, the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back Stash. I think we should go all out and have all our film memorabilia, favourite posters all from, and have a whole studio built for us. And next door, there's a cinema. So we go and watch the new release, we watch the rewatch, and we come back and it's laid out. Because I know what you're saying, Ben, but we could then plug stuff in the background and we could have like sports equipment that we want and endorsements from certain companies. Like, Mark, why have you suddenly got in the corner a Ford Escort, brand new one, because we want endorsements? Yeah. We can plug shit all the time.
Well, I'll cut you a deal then, right? My landlord has kicked me out, so I've got to find a new flat quite soon. So I'll get a two-bed, so that one of the rooms can be like a podcast studio and we can have all the shit we need to plug.
Awesome.
I'll do that as long as you two pay the excess rent that a two-bedroom will cost me. Are you in?
Ben's our landlord.
Oh, shit, man. Yeah, I can't pay rent this time. Get on your knees.
Fucking hell.
On Twitter, we've had Ben Reed, which is @darkbreed. I love some of these tags, really decent usernames. We all know Cooper loves cherry pie at the RR Diner on Twin Peaks. We bloody do. What are you laughing?
Cherry pie!
So which recipe or dish from movies would you love to try? That's a tasty question.
Oh, God. Anything from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
The everlasting gobstopper.
Yeah, or like the gum that's like a three-course meal. Like the wallpaper. The snazberries taste like snazberries.
Yeah.
I want to know what a snazberry tastes like.
Ben, what do you think?
Do you remember that scene in Goodfellas where you see the guys in prison, so Paulie and all the other wise guys who've been arrested? They're in prison, but because they're like known quantities and because they've got like a bit of sway, they get all food brought in. So even though they're behind bars, they're having these lavish meals of lobster and steak and garlic that they cut with a razor blade. So it's so thin that it liquefies in the pan.
Oh, and you're making me hungry.
It's pasta sauce on marron, you know. It makes you want to be in prison.
I'd have the Turkish delight off Narnia. I don't know. They put it in this like enchanted box. It's so. You know what I'm like with sweets.
Yeah.
But the pizza on Home Alone, is it Little Nero? That looks, even though it's just like margarita, it looks the nicest pizza in the world. Mm-hmm. And me and Ben have had the nicest pizza in the world in America.
No way.
True, Benny's at near the Comedy Cellar. Beautiful.
Ooh.
They're not going to send it off from New York.
On airmail pizzas from Benny's.
Next up, we've got I'm, which is at imomoss777. If you guys were going to name a pub or a restaurant and take inspiration from a movie, what would it be and what would be on your menus? That's a great question.
Cool. I don't know. Maybe like a Tom Cruise themed restaurant or bar called Whiskey Business.
Oh, nice.
Or maybe a Jim Carrey one called Rum and Rummer.
Oh, I can't beat that. I would do more of a Back to the Future place called Marty's, like Marty McFly's. Mm-hmm. And they would have 80s themes. When you walk in, there's the perfect Pepsi cocktails, which would be beautiful. You'd have burgers, you'd have shakes. And when you walk in, you'd have Michael Jackson on the screen talking to you. And then, how good would that be? Because there'd be no kids around. Whee! That would be awesome for us.
It's good for him as well, yeah. Because you don't want temptation, do you?
He is scarier to kids than Pennywise.
Oh my god.
So.
Right.
Gemma.
Yeah, I would have a Silence of the Lambs themed restaurant or bar. I'd call it, you know, like the Silent Lamb. You'd nice. Have we'd serve Buffalo Bill wings.
Oh, nice.
Cheese and Hammerball toasties.
Oh,
very good.
Okay. If you want a drink, you could have lamb spice rum or you could have a pint at Jodie Foster's.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. This is brilliant.
Yeah, when you go to the bathroom, rather than like have hand gel, you put the lotion on your skin or else you get the hose again.
Let's open this because I think people would come. And talking about that, even though it's not a film, whenever I watched Hannibal, the TV series, that made me hungry. Whatever he cooked.
Oh, shit, yeah.
My God, Mads Mikkelsen is a good cook. That looked bloody tasty.
Yeah, they actually had a person on set whose job it was to basically tart up all the meals.
Oh.
It was essentially food porn, that film, but it was with human body parts.
Yes.
You shouldn't be looking at a meal that you know is lung, but thinking that looks fucking great.
Yeah.
I fancy
so
some
tasty.
Fibula ribs or something.
Beautiful. Next question comes from at Warriors. What is the best movie-related Funko that you each own?
Oh, well, I bought one a couple of weeks ago, actually. It's Michael Corleone from The Godfather.
Oh, nice.
Brilliant, yeah.
I was so enchanted with the elf giveaway that we did, I decided to buy myself Buddy the Elf.
Nice.
He sits proudly on my fireplace.
Awesome. I've got, and Ben will go mad, but I've got the Kevin Smith one, which was hard to get because I've been trying to get the pops for everyone I've interviewed on Mark and Me. Mm. So I've got Corey.
Oi.
Corey Feldman from The Goonies. But that was a hard one because it's bloody expensive and I don't want to spend a lot of money. It was about 50 quid, but I found one for about 20.
Does the Kevin Smith one come in a larger box?
And now, since then, I've got a Comic-Con exclusive Kevin Smith as well. So
ooh,
it's pretty good. But yeah, I'm
fancy.
Trying to... If you're listening, Funko, can you please, for that reason, make a Funko of Blomkamp? That would be awesome.
Of Neil Blomkamp?
Yeah, I'd need that just so I can...
Oh, because you're interested.
Yeah, of course. Anything else would be great. I want Funkos made of us.
Yeah.
I know you're listening, Funko.
Definitely. Yeah.
Please do it.
Please, Sully, please.
Please.
Speak to the right people.
Even if we have to pay them. I'd pay for my own. Would you?
No, I want them free.
Keith Bloomfield, which is at hardluck_hotel. What is the most mind-blowing special effects you've ever seen and what film does it appear in?
Oh, hands down, the dog turning inside out in a thing.
Oh, that's horrible.
Brutal.
But
disgusting.
This was before the age of special effects done on computers and videos. This was all organic. Incredible to watch.
It's the best practical effects
ever.
It really is.
I think for me it has to be the Stargate sequence from 2001 A Space Odyssey. When you think about how mind-blowing that still is, and it came out in 1968.
Yeah.
That
people, is 50 fucking years ago. And it still looks insanely great.
Ahead of its time.
For me, it's Inception, the time we see the buildings folding over. The first time I saw that, I was like, wow. But for nostalgia reasons, and the first time as a kid, I was blown away. T2, when the face is shot in half.
That
looks unbelievable. Yeah. And it doesn't look as dated as it is. It's just crazy. Robert Denhelm Hall, which is at Hall_business. Would you consider a skip to the end code of conduct for the cinema? And what would you clamp down on the most?
Oh, shit. Hell yeah. I mean, it's simple. Yeah. There are three simple rules for that. Number one, phone off. Number two, mouth shut. Number three, leave your fucking noisy snacks at home.
Nice. That's quite scary because I would be no phones, no loud snacks at all, no kids.
Yes. No kids, that's a good one, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, just the time for talking is outside of the film. You paid a ticket, you watched the goddamn film, so shut the fuck up.
This has got a lot of fucks on this episode. It's loads.
It's warranted.
And it's our Coco episode.
Yeah. It's like that Limp Bizkit song where every other word is fuck. There's 26 fucks in this fucked up round.
But it's on. And this could be the one episode where kids start listening. Oh, Coco, I want to listen.
Oh, whoops.
Michael, which is @does_k_dream, your favourite ever 80s TV shows.
Oh, shit. Knight Rider?
That's a great show.
Or A-Team, I don't know.
I love Alf. Remember the alien Alf? That was awesome. Yeah. Thundercats. And you're going to laugh, but Roseanne. I don't know why.
Roseanne's a good show. Yeah.
It's coming back.
I know.
It's going to be awful. I don't like her anymore. I just don't. But if John Goodman's in it, I'll be quite happy.
He is. Even though he died. Damn. He died. Yeah. In the last season, he died. And now they're resurrecting him. I don't know.
Oh, well.
I love Golden Girls for some reason.
Yeah. Golden Girls was fun.
That was brilliant. So
thank you
good.
For being the a friend.
Better the confidant or something. And Betty White.
You're a friend and a confidant.
And Betty White is still alive today and she is so funny.
She's like, 97, I believe, which is 90, insane.
97 years young as well. We love you, Betty. But yeah, Golden Girls all day.
Brilliant. A couple more. Let's go to Facebook. Martin Street has said, have you ever liked a film character's dress sense that much that you've gone out to try and emulate it? And who and what was it?
Oh, God. I actually did. Do you remember?
Please, anyone that's listening, send us pics.
Do you remember the film Road Trip?
Yes.
Yeah, and like Sean William Scott, old Stifler, he was in it. And in that film, he always wears like Adidas track pants, but then a button-down proper like work shirt. And I've always sort of lounged around in Adidas track pants anyway, and I thought that that was a cool look. So when I was at university, I used to sort of bob around in Adidas track pants and a button-down shirt thinking I was the fucking tits. And I wasn't the tits, I was a tit.
Yes.
When I was 14, I was obsessed with Clueless, so I wanted to dress up as Cher. So I'd have like the little skirts, like the crop top, like the feather hat and the beret.
Jeez.
I thought I was Cher, but I was more Scare.
I want to see. There has to be pictures of that around.
If we can get the pictures, would you be comfortable to Instagram these out for the listeners? If you can find them anywhere.
Well, I know that none of me exists, so that's fine. So yes, my
Gemma,
answer is yes.
Yes, yes.
Burnt mine to the ground, it's okay.
When I was at uni, I thought I could look like Brad Pitt. So I went and got
Brad shit. And,
Bad pit.
So I went out and got a red leather jacket like off Fight Club. I did my hair, got the glasses, and instead of looking like Brad Pitt, I looked like Armpit. It was absolutely horrendous. And I've got a photo.
Need to see it. Pictures or it didn't happen.
Yeah, all right. Social media, please give me a little bit of slack because it's awful. You know, you just think you can look like it.
Red leather jacket.
Yeah, it's Jesus not good.
There should be a law against that.
I've never seen you in anything leather.
No. Well...
Other than the gimp suit.
Yes, that's because I'll give him that because we always have the light off. We always have the light off when we do it.
Considerate lover.
Two rules, lights off, always kiss. That's the rules with me and Ben.
Yeah. Rule three, you've got to look each other directly in the eyes as it happens. You can't blink.
And if it's your first night, you've got to put out. Final question. Amy Gibson has said, Gemma, God, Gemma gets the limelight.
Oh, question for Gemma, is it? I'll bob off then, shall I?
What do you most enjoy about making your home videos and where did it all start?
I remember when it started. It was at the beginning of last year, I believe, and I just did a little video of me popping off a cap of a brother's cider and just dancing to Celebration by Cool in the Gang, I think. But I quite like doing sort of funny little edits. Like the latest one we did was based on The Shining.
That was really good. Thank with the cardboard door being knocked down.
And of course, my best impression of an elbow as well.
Yeah, you did good.
Thank you. But I like doing stuff like that. And one of my favourites was doing the Last Jedi one, because that looked kind of cool when it was all edited.
When you moved with the mind trick, that was clever.
Because that was real. I didn't really do it. That's why I loved it so much. I did zero editing for it.
My favourite one is when you were going around Las Vegas and it was all the cuts of you saying, Kanye!
That was awesome.
That was genius.
I got a lot of good looks from that. I just like doing it because it's a little homage to the films that we mention and the films that we look at on each episode. And it's just basically my physical testament to being an absolute movie nerd.
All right. Stop putting yourself over now, love. This is a team game, yeah? You know what I mean? She's gone into business for herself.
Ben, are you looking forward to the next episode when she plays homage to American Psycho and hires some prostitutes and murders them? Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to that.
I will not eat Christie's ass. No.
That's degrading. Anyway, keep your... Keep your questions coming. The best way to reach us is on skiptotheend.co.uk. And yeah, just bloody send us some questions.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It's been a silly one, this one.
I like the silly ones. You know, when you just feel like you can let your hair down and just drink cider and just not give a toss about the world.
Yeah.
Or hang out with your mate, John Coffey.
John Coffey. And speaking of drinking cider, I'm on about my sixth. I've gone mad here.
Yeah.
I've actually finished all the Brothers and I'm now on Smirnoff Passion Fruit and Lime.
Is it nice?
That's Smirnoff.
It's not as nice as Brothers. No. I've got Brothers Hop Cider. Born in a Field in Somerset. It's absolutely gorgeous. Like, genuinely, it's one of my favourite drinks.
It's tremendous. But no, it's not a competition. You like that, I like this. It's all good, isn't it?
Tops off,
so wrestle. Nice. It's so tasty.
I know. But the episode's not over yet. We have the usual finale to our show, which is where we give you Skip to the Recommend. It's where we name our pop culture recommendation of the week. It can be something brand new, it can be something old, but it's something we've just discovered this past week, and we want you to enjoy it too. Now, before we announce our new Skip to the Recommends, I want to just relate back to the last episode. Now, Gemma, you brought up Peaky Blinders, didn't you?
I certainly did.
And at the time, I hadn't seen it. Now, I've been on annual leave from work, and I could have done something interesting with my life, but I didn't. I sat on the sofa and I watched four seasons, whatever the fuck, of Peaky Blinders, and it's absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
You were so right. And you said I would like Arthur, didn't you?
Yes.
You're not wrong.
Yes.
And I just get a little thrill every time he says, Peaky fucking Blinders.
Yes.
What a great show it is. Series 3, I was kind of lukewarm on, but Series 1 and 2, and especially Series 4, phenomenal.
Isn't it so cinematic?
It's brilliant. And Cillian Murphy's just the king.
Yeah.
So I second Gemma's previous Skip to the Recommend. But let's hear your new one, Gemma.
Okay, so I've gone for a true crime comedy podcast. So my choice this time around is My Favourite Murder.
Mm.
So it's a weekly podcast hosted by American comedians Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark, and it's available on iTunes, Spotify and Stitcher. So they each share a murder in history and they talk about the events surrounding it. They do mini episodes where listeners submit a hometown murder and they tour live across the world, bring the show to various theatres. So the idea was born out of when they met at a Halloween party and Kilgariff described to the other one, Georgia, witnessing a drunk driver ploughing through a crowd of people at the South by Southwest Festival in 2015. Pretty harrowing.
Yeah, I remember reading about that at the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. It was not very nice. And they talked about it, and then it kind of developed on all these different murders that they wanted to talk about, and a friendship was born out of these events. So, yeah, it's a morbid subject. It's not exactly Mary fucking Poppins, but they approach
Mary fucking Poppins.
Official title now on the Disney Channel.
Yeah. But they approach these topics with humour and sensitivity, so they never mock or make fun of the victims that they talk about. They show this real nice compassion towards them and any of the survivors that went through these atrocities, and they try and question why these people would do such a thing. Mm. And they've actually admitted that the show's almost like therapy for them to help deal with their own anxieties about murders. And by talking about it, it's quite relatable to people who do listen to it. And you know, murder's never a nice thing, but I find subjects about it so fascinating. So having this new way of listening to these true crimes is brilliant. You know, they've got this really great chemistry together along with their producer, Stephen, and it's electric, it's intriguing, and it's surprisingly warm. They also are responsible for one of the best catchphrases ever. They end every episode with the phrase, stay sexy and don't get murdered.
Nice.
Let's nick that.
Yeah. stay skippy and don't get murdered. It's not got the same ring, has it?
You know. But every time I see a notification come up, I instantly watch it. The live shows are a hoot. The mini episodes are great for a quick fix. Mm. And the overall episodes themselves are damn near fascinating.
Sounds great and really cathartic. I'll give that a go. Mm.
Yeah, it does sound very good.
A must for any true crime fans out there.
When you recommend podcasts, it's one of those things that I see a lot of people on social media saying they've gone and checked it out, and it's always really, really popular. What was the last one you did?
The last one I did was Law.
Yeah.
And S-Town you did.
Yeah. S-Town, yeah. Dirty John. Sorry,
Dirty John. That was
the one. I saw so many tweets.
And funnily enough, during the sort of end of year review of podcasts, Dirty John was topping quite a lot of lists. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
How about you, Mark?
Mine's a TV series.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody in the whole world has been telling me to watch it, and I don't know why, I just didn't, but it's Inside Number 9.
Oh, my God, yes! Bloody yes, Mark!
Gemma's just gone mental. Gemma's just actually exploded.
Genuinely one of the best British dark comedy series I've ever seen in my entire life, done by the brains of the League of Gentlemen. It's written and stars Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton, and I'm telling you now, this is up there with League of Gentlemen. It is some of the best acting I've ever seen in my entire life. Every episode is different. You can just pick any episode you want. Mm. They're all on BBC iPlayer. But my God, I've blitzed through them all like you did, Ben, with Peaky Blinders. Yeah. I've done it all over Christmas and I've just now caught up with the new season. My God, this is some of the best TV I've ever seen in my entire life. I would at times say it's better than League of Gentlemen.
The writing, big words, and the acting
is unbelievable. So the three episodes I want to quickly talk about is The 12 Days of Christine.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
You will cry. You will cry.
Yeah,
you will
cry. Did. I did.
But the best episode I've ever seen is Bernie Clifford's dressing room.
Yes.
Seriously, dude.
Oh, my God, yes.
This episode is about two actors that used to share the stage together 30 years ago, and they're reunited for the first time as this comedy duo is called Cheese and Crackers.
Cheese and Crackers.
Honestly, dude, I can't sum it up, really. It makes you cry, it makes you laugh, it makes you angry. The writing of this is better than League. The writing is.
Yeah.
You wait to see an episode, Ben. You will just text me and be like, I've done the whole lot in a week.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I believe that, and it's crazy because I'm the world's biggest League of Gentlemen fan. You know, the recent Christmas mm-hmm. specials they did were absolutely amazing and they hadn't missed a step. But I've not seen anything of any of the shows with the same guy. So I've not seen any of Inside Number 9. I've not seen any of Psychoville.
Oh,
Mama!
You know, no, it's harrowing.
So it's great. I know I need to get on it sooner rather than later.
I honestly, Gemma, talk to me a little bit because have you caught up?
I've got season 3 to do now. So I've done season 1, season 2, season 4. So I'm, but I know it's.
Did you cry at Bernie Clifton?
Are you kidding me? I was on my knees screaming at the sky. It's just.
Honestly, dude, I can't. Anything I've ever recommended, scrap everything, just watch this.
One of my favourite episodes was the one with the sort of the Samaritan's Hotline.
Yeah.
Everything. I don't want to ruin it. No. But it's a very special way of how everything is shot. And by the end of it, it's an anthology.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way to describe it. You can pick any single episode from any single season and just go from there.
And do you know what the most annoying part is? It's been around for 4 years now, and we haven't done it till now.
Yeah.
Come on then, Ben, what have you got?
So I've got a TV show as well. It's a show called Startup.
Okay.
And it's on Amazon Prime in the UK. It's on an internet service in the US called Crackle. And it's been around for 2 seasons. And there are only 10 episodes per season. And I kind of stumbled upon it when I was just looking through what was on Amazon Prime to see if there was anything any good. And the reason why I started watching this is because the little picture they showed, Martin Freeman was in it. We all love Martin Freeman from The Office and Fargo. And Startup, it's a crime drama about a coder, an entrepreneur, and a Haitian gangster who team up to launch a new cryptocurrency called GenCoin. And by cryptocurrency, I mean, you know, like Bitcoin, that fake nonsense that people actually put money into.
I have no idea what that is. I keep seeing it. I'm like, what?
It's bullshit. It's ethereal. It's magic. It's something that people believe exists, so they make it seem to exist.
Ridiculous.
But it's nonsense. Mm. And anyone who puts their cash into it is an absolute fucking imbecile,
in my opinion.
That's by the by. But the show stars Adam Brody, who we'll know as Seth from The OC, one of the classical time shows. He plays the entrepreneur. And then, as I say, Martin Freeman's in it. He plays an unhinged FBI agent who's playing totally against type. He's a real prick. Like, you know, he's totally corrupt and trying to fuck over these guys and steal all their money. And he's absolutely brilliant. The second season of the show, Ron Perlman joins it as an investor.
Nice.
And we all know, you know, Ron Perlman makes everything better. Mm. The show kind of positions itself as kind of a cross between Halt and Catch Fire, which I've talked about before, and Breaking Bad. I am not for a single second saying it is as good as either of those shows, because in my opinion, they're both all-time legendary shows. But it's a good, fun watch. 20 episodes, it's a great fun binge, great cast, and it's a shame because Crackle in the US is not a big service. It's kind of the red-headed stepchild of all the internet services. It's no Netflix, it's no Amazon, it's not even a Hulu. No one really gives a shit about Crackle. So no one talks about this show, no one really watches it, it doesn't get reviewed, but it's worth your time. It's got a great cast, a great premise, and it's a lot of fun.
Sounds Amazon's good. Really worth the money at the moment. Forget about it. I go through Netflix and I'm like, oh shit, I've got Amazon. Go on there. There's some bloody good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
How many episodes?
20.
That's fine.
Nice and short for you, Mark.
It'll do. How long's each episode?
About 45 minutes.
Oh, I know.
It's a bit long. Yeah, take you a few days. You'll be all right.
I don't think I'm going to bother. Sorry, dude, but it sounds good.
It is genuinely very good. Watch Startup on Amazon Prime.
Talking about very good. What's on our next episode?
Ooh, look at that. That is a seamless segue. Professional.
And that is what I want.
We're going to be reviewing another Oscar hopeful. It's I, Tonya.
Ooh.
It's the story of Tonya Harding, starring Margot Robbie and Allison Janney. And it sounds fantastic. We're actually getting to see it early because we've got invites to a press screening.
Wow, thank you, E1, for sorting us out.
It's just the rub we get it's from just, being
yeah.
in
That's what it's like.
Skip to the End podcast.
Is the main actress going to be there?
Yeah, big time. She sat next to me.
Oh, cool. That'd be awesome.
I'm going to do the popcorn trick.
Yep.
Oh,
oh, that's degrading. Don't get salty. It really stings your bell end. What else?
Well, our top three for the next episode is going to be our top three worst on-screen chemistry.
Oh, it's been a while since we bashed something
in the
topic.
I love it when we're hateful.
Yeah.
It's just your natural stance,
yeah,
isn't it, Gemma?
I'm just built on spite.
Oh, as you know, Skip the End love Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for us to rewatch Pulp Fiction. It's mad, isn't it, that we haven't done it after 88 episodes.
3.5 years and we've not done it. That is mental.
I can't wait. And you know social media. Everyone's seen it. Just let us know. If you've watched it and you love it, or you watch it again with us, let us know your thoughts, because we love it.
Movie Masturbate is going to be a huge one. We've got Harrison Ford, a man who has originated at least three of the most iconic characters in cinema history. At least three.
I know.
And maybe more beyond. Oh, my word. That's going to be a goodie.
Yeah. And we're going to do round three, the final round of Box Office Brawl.
It's I'll be honest now, looking at this episode, I don't know if I'm ready for it. We've got one of the big Oscar films.
We can do
We've got
this.
Pulp Fiction. Yeah. We find out the winner of the game show. We've got Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
What? Do you know what? I'm going to get fuckloads of good prizes as well. Do you know what? Just to make it too much. It's going to have Funko Pops. We're going to have everything. We're going to go crazy.
You know those clickers that people have? You know, bouncers at nightclubs. Yes. Anyone who comes in, they click one, two. I'm going to get one for every time we say fuck.
Yeah.
It'll be up to 943 now.
But I am. I'm going to get the best presents and prizes. Presents? We're not doing presents. We're doing prizes. It's going to be amazing.
Good.
It's going to be the same old Skip to the End that you know and love. See you in 2 weeks. Just know that nothing you do will